Blog Talk Radio.
Are y'all ready for the fire talk? Low down on the biz and uplift the dialogue. Oh, yeah. Listen right along. This is straight off the press. The remix fresh with no prior song. Oh. Supplying y'all with the certified thoughtful. Yeah. To get the piece of the feet, it's time to call blow. Yeah. The rasp everywhere is fragrant, flavorful. Insatiable eardrums taste the radio. It can't be beat. The clash with me. Better leave all your doors and all half the week. What? Positive and motivational facts to see successful guests. Promote yourself, masturbate. BlogTalkRadio.com/the remix. Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Support the sister with a great reason. I must insist, don't miss it this evening. Peace, man.
Welcome to The Remix. I am your host, of course, Miss Blue, and you know where you are. You are live in The Remix. I want to say welcome to everyone out there. So glad to have you guys joining me here live in the forum tonight. Peace and greetings to you guys out there, and thanks so much for joining us. It is December the 16th, 2012, and of course, you know where you are. You are live in The Remix. I want to go ahead and give out the number to the show. Lock it in. Keep it close to you. 646-652-2711 is the number to call, and that's going to put you on the phone lines. You can actually listen that way. If you're calling from an international country, and I know you guys are listening from all over the world, you can simply dial your country code, the U.S. country code, press 1, and then dial 646-652-2711, and it's going to connect you right here to The Remix. You can also use Skype. You can also use Skype, and that's going to get you logged straight in, too. And I'm getting some reports that I am kind of breaking up here. So let's see. And let's see if this happens to clear up for you. And hopefully that connection will be a little clearer for you. And you guys can hear me loud and clear. So let's see. Welcome, everyone, to The Remix. If you want to come and join us in the forum, all you have to do is come on over to www.blogtalkradio.com/The Remix, all one word, and you can come on in the chat room, and we'll definitely make you feel welcome right here. So if you're a guest and you're joining us in the forum for the very first time, all you have to do is click the sign up button at the very bottom. And once you click the sign up button at the very bottom, you can sign up, tell us who you are, and come right on in. And the Remix family is going to make you feel right at home. So welcome everyone to the forum tonight. And thank you guys so much for joining us. We had a really, really interesting show on the forum last on Friday night. For those of you who were in the house, who participated in that share. It was an excellent share when it came to relationships and just exploring those things. And don't forget that show and all of the other Remix shows, all you have to do is download. And once you download the show, you can do that many ways. You can actually go over to iTunes and you can click the little iTunes button right on the Remix Radio page, and you can download it straight to your iTunes or iPod device. You can also download it straight to your computer. That's going to be one of the ways that you can get in, and you can download it straight there. And then also, the other thing that you can actually do is you can actually come on over to the Remix page and download the show that way. So many different ways. I'm sorry, you guys. Lots of things going on here, and I want to make sure that we get ready to receive this very powerful message. Dr. Umar Johnson is going to be joining us here live in the forum tonight. And yes, we're going to be talking about so many different things, his new project, and everything that he has going on as well. So, here's what we're going to do, everyone. We're going to listen to a little bit of music here as we get ready to get into the share. And once we get ready to get into the share, then we're going to go from there. So just give me 1 second here, and we're going to get that. Okay, so I'm going to play some music just right now, just so you can kind of get yourself in the mode, and we'll be right back after that. Yep, one moment, everyone. Let's see. All right, you guys. Sorry for that short delay right there. Here's the deal. I'm going to ask if any of you can listen via the internet or through other devices, then I need to try to listen that way. Right now, we have hundreds of people on the phone line, and Dr. Umar Johnson just called me and told me he can't get in. And so we need him to get in. We definitely need him to get in. I'm going to see if he's in. And but yes, we need to have him in so we can have this share here tonight. I know you guys are all excited, and I am too. It's always, you know, a beautiful thing when we have Dr. Umar Johnson come on. And yes, I believe he is in, so wonderful. All right, you guys. And so I want to make sure, I want to give a shout out to you guys. We're going to listen to a little bit of music, you guys. And we're going to get ready to get right into the share because we have so much we're going to cover. War on the Blood Children of the World. First of all, you guys, you know, it's so many things going on right now. And this is a lot of what Dr. Umar Johnson is going to be talking to us about today. It's a big part of his work. It is about these things that he always speaks about when he comes on the show. And we're also going to be talking about those current events. He'll be talking about his new project, which I'm so excited about, his new book that's out right now. You can actually pre-order, and you can actually do that immediately. So you want to get yourself in line, and you want to get a copy of that book. We're going to talk about that. Also get information on how you can contact Dr. Umar Johnson. You can go to his website, and we're going to be giving out that information too. So thank you guys so much for your patience. It's Sunday night. I'm your host, of course, Miss Blue, and you're live in the remix. What better place to be? So we're going to listen to a little bit of music. It's a real interesting story behind these brothers. And we're going to be pulling that up right here. Let's see. Pulling that up. Oh, I think I just passed it. All right. So we're going to be listening to these brothers here. These are some powerful brothers, and I know you've heard that. And we're going to hear a little bit of Baby Blue, and then we're going to get ready to receive this message tonight. Welcome, welcome, everyone from around the world. I'm going to give an international shout-out in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. That was Black Violin and these two amazing brothers confused together hip-hop with classical music. And they were actually inspired by jazz musician Stuff Smith, who was a classical violinist. A jazz violinist who played, and they really heard one of his musical compilations, and they were inspired by that, and so they named their group Black Violin. So they are producers, they are also writers, and they are also classical violin players, and very, very powerful brothers who've worked with all kinds of brothers and sisters all over, and they are currently, I believe they are attending, they are from Florida. Yeah, they're Florida, and I forgot one of them is still in school, but you can Google that, Black Violin, awesome, awesome CD. Their music, very uplifting, very positive, and doing their work. So welcome to the remix, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the remix. Yes, it does look like we have Dr. Umar Johnson on the line. So we will. We will have everyone there. I know you guys say the sound is kind of going in and out. We're going to see how that is to make sure that we can hear everything. What we're going to do at this time is we're going to listen to a little bit of Baby Blue, and then we're not going to hesitate because we have a lot of things to cover here tonight. We can get to all the other things in just a moment, but I want to welcome Brother Umar Johnson on the forum. Joining us here live in the remix.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stop! It's the remix!
This is Blue Raspberry Wayne, and you are live in the remix.
Hey, yeah!
All right, so here we go. Let's go ahead and bring Dr. Umar Johnson on the line with us. Peace and
peace and love, Ms. Blue. How's it going? It's an honor to be with you tonight.
It is an honor to have you here on the forum. We are so glad that you could make it here. Had to kind of make an announcement so we can clear up some of the lines so you could actually get in. Everyone is excited, and we are so glad to have you in the forum with us here tonight, sharing your work. I want to start out, because I know you are a brother who's very, very busy about your work, and just give those, because we have a lot of international listeners listening from many different countries now all over the world, and others listening here, a little bit about you. Share a little bit with that, us, and your work you do.
Indeed. My name is Dr. Umar Johnson. I am a certified school psychologist. I am also a doctor of clinical psychology and an educator, former school assistant principal, and also trained as a political scientist. Also a Pan-Africanist, a follower of the teachings of the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the other great Pan-Africanists who have sought to organize us globally. I spend most of my time working with parents and community leaders, lawyers, educators, lobbyists, to try to help prevent the miseducation of Black boys. That's the heart of my work. My life's journey is to try to build a fully residential academy for African boys, an international school that they can attend regardless of where they live on the planet, so that they can be properly educated. It is my contention that there's no school in the world that properly educates African children the way that they should be taught. The skills of political science, financial science, agricultural science, the science of the Black man, the science of the Black woman, spiritual science, dietary and nutritional science. There's six sciences that should be taught to all African children, and I don't see those six sciences occurring simultaneously in any school on earth. So it is my life's work to try and build that school for our young people because they so desperately need it. I contend that the education institution is the most important institution in any community because it educates and it socializes. It teaches the next generation how to think and how to act. If there's any people who need to be retaught how to think and retaught how to act, it's African people.
Yes, 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 yes. All right. Beautiful, beautiful. And I want to thank you so much for coming here. I know you've been on the road and moving around, traveling a lot, and just doing your work in so many different ways. And you also have a new book that's coming out. You want to tell
us? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. My new book, very first book, my very, very first book. So I just really want to get the book out. It is a monkey that has been on my professional back for some time, not having a book, although I have a plethora of DVDs and I give a plethora of speeches and I do a lot of work. I haven't yet produced the book or published one, rather. So this is my very first book, my rookie book, if you would, The Psychoacademic Holocaust Against Black Boys, the Special Education and ADHD Wars. This is going to be a book that's going to chronicle these specific strategies, mannerisms, underpinnings, and techniques that are used to miseducate black boys around the planet. And my travels to Canada, and my travels to Jamaica, Bermuda, St. Croix, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Senegal, from Los Angeles to Texas, where I'm in tonight. So we're actually in the same state this evening. I'm in Fort Worth, and of course, you're in the Houston area. But regardless of where I go, I find the same techniques being used to miseducate our young men. And the two most powerful techniques, although they may differ in name depending on the country in which you live, they don't differ in terms of intent or agenda. And that is special education and psychiatric medication. That is the learning disability and ADHD. These are two weapons of mass destruction that are used to marginalize black boys and thereby destabilizing their life choices and opportunities. So in the book, I'm going to talk specifically about how this is done. I'm going to go over the diagnoses for ADHD. We're going to go over the diagnoses for conduct disorder. We're going to go over the diagnoses for oppositional defiant disorder. We're going to look at the criteria for the learning disability. We're going to look at the criteria for mental retardation and the emotional disturbance. These are the six most frequently diagnoses given to African boys around the globe. And I'm going to analyze the diagnoses and show you how these diagnoses that are being used to marginalize black boys are not scientific constructs. They are not scientific. They cannot be proven. These are man-made ideas, philosophies, and hypotheses that have grown out of a historical, racist, psychological system that is looking to make money off of black boys at the same time that they miseducate and over-medicate those boys. And at the end of the book, Mrs. Blue, I have a chapter entitled Frequently Asked Questions, when I'm going to go over some of the most persistent questions that parents tend to ask me at lectures, through email, Facebook, and Twitter. So this book will be a weapon of mass construction in the hands of black and brown and even parents who are not of African descent who desire an honest answer as to exactly what special ed is, what ADHD is, what is its original intent, and what are its current side effects. So this will be a useful guide. And once this book is out, I probably won't get as many phone calls and emails from parents as I do now about what to do about certain situations, because they will have a manual that they can carry with them that shows them how to fight to protect their sons.
Beautiful, beautiful, and very, very powerful. I want to talk about that because I know so many people are asking me already, how can they get this book? So I want you to let everyone know how they can actually start to get themselves in the position so that they can have a hand on this book.
Sure. Anyone who's interested in pre-ordering the book, they can begin to do so now as we speak. I have two websites. There's the Dr. Umar Johnson cell phone site, and then you have the drumarjohnson.com full site that you can access through your laptop. And so all you do on the cell phone site, there's actually a link that says order the book, and you click on that link and you can make your PayPal purchase. And if you're on the full site, which is drumarjohnson.com, they both are, you're automatically redirected to the cell phone site if you're ordering via your cell phone. But when you go to drumarjohnson.com, all you have to do is click on shop, S-H-O-P. And when you click on shop, shop will take you to the page where you can order the book via PayPal, as many copies as you like. And if you pre-order my book before New Year's Day, which is just about 2 weeks away, if you pre-order by January the 1st, you will get a free copy of the companion DVD by the same name, Psychoacademic Holocaust, The Special Education and ADHD Wars Against Black Boys. The official release date for the book is February the 1st, the first day of Black History Month. That's when the book will actually be released. But if you pre-order it by January the 1st, when your copy is sent to you, you will also have the free companion DVD as well. If you don't purchase by January 1st, you can still order the book, but the companion DVD will have to be purchased also, which will be a $20 product that you will get for free just by ordering the book now at drumarjohnson.com.
Definitely. So you guys, you definitely want to get yourself over and get this book. It is definitely going to be something that is for every household, whether you have a young boy, a child in your home or not. It is going to be sort of that, like Brother Johnson said, it is our weapon that we have. I want to get into talking about some of the details here, and here's something that people sometimes get a little confused. So I want you, Dr. Umar, to explain to us, what is a black boy?
A black boy is a male child whose parents are direct descendants of the original peoples of Africa. A black boy is also a political entity. He is considered to be a weapon of mass destruction, allegedly, by European countries that they have to control if they are to have a successful society. He is the most misunderstood human being. He is the most marginalized human being. And the black boy, in all of his innocence, is unfortunately expected to bear a responsibility that no one else has to bear, and that is being the accused causer of most problems that exist, not only in our society, but internationally. The black boy is the original man. The black man is the original man. The black woman is the original woman. So he's the father of humanity, but unfortunately, in the 21st century, his status has been transformed into that of a savage, of a comic, of a buffoon, of a criminal, of a abuser of women, of as a inmate in a jail cell. His entire image has been exterminated. And unfortunately, so many black boys have bought into the propaganda that says the only thing you can be is an athlete or a lawbreaker. And as a result of that, so many of our boys are now glamorizing athletics and lawbreaking as the only forms of acceptable life alternatives that they have, because so many traditional routes of success have been closed off to them, such as law school, Wall Street, traditional college, business ownership. These things have been shut out and kept away from the black boy. And so now he feels that the only thing he can do in life is survive by making an illegal type of a career for himself.
And that's important for us to understand. I know you talked about those six, I call them, six levels of responsibility, or those six, I can't remember the term you coined. What were you saying? The six
sciences?
The six sciences, yes, about the responsibility. I want to talk about that, and I thought it was important that you spoke on that, about what the black boy, what is a black boy, or what is considered to be a black boy, because this goes deeper than just your skin color. This is about And so that's important for people to see and understand that this isn't just about your skin color here. This is something a lot more embellished than that.
Very much so. Very much so. We have to look at how the image of the black male in general, and the boy in particular, has been so destroyed And unfortunately, we as a people often participate in the production of negative images about ourselves. If you look at gangster rap may have done more than the white media itself to destroy the image of the young black male. I mean, we have to understand, most white people have never lived with a black person in the neighborhood. They don't really know them, haven't even worked with them. I remember when I went to military school, or a school that was paramilitary, and I had a roommate who had never met black people before he came to the school. So I think black people take for granted that white people know us as we really are. A lot of them don't. For most of them, their experience of what a black person is comes directly from the television and the radio. And so when we see people treat us in certain types of ways, yes, a lot of that comes directly from white supremacy, but a lot of it comes from the ignorance that we ourselves choose to portray. Just because Hollywood wants to paint black people in a negative light doesn't mean we have to participate. And I think it's such a shame that when you look at many of our black movie producers, whether it's Tyler Perry, Spike Lee, the Hughes brothers, Ice Cube, and many of the others, most of the movies that they put out are either comedies where everything is funny, or they portray us in a very negative light, women who can't have successful relationships, black men who don't work, don't do nothing but sell drugs, shoot each other up, want to become basketball players and rappers. And so it's a shame that so many of our movie producers also are about the business of propagating the filthy images that black men have so long had to deal with since slavery ended.
So true. Let's talk about one of the other responsibility, the other sciences that we need to understand, because so many of our children, and this is something we talked about when you came on the show before, and I've seen just from talking to some of my friends, a high number of this happening with our children in school, being diagnosed with all of these things that are coming out of the DSM, this ADHD. I mean, there's so many different call letters that it is insane. I know you address a lot of this in your book, but can you speak to particularly ADHD? Because this is almost, it's becoming sort of second nature, like people are saying it about their children. I find this in the readings and the sessions I have with parents. Oh, you know, he has ADHD and blah, 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 blah. Almost like it is just a natural language that it goes along with our children.
Yes, indeed. I spoke to a class of students yesterday here in Fort Worth, Texas, at an African-centered school. I don't think, none of them were in high school. Okay. Most of them were elementary school students, a couple eighth, couple seventh, couple fifth, mostly elementary school. And I asked them by a show of hands, who knows what ADHD is? Who has ever heard of it? Every hand was raised. There wasn't a child in there from kindergarten through eighth grade who did not know what ADHD was. All of them knew it. How did this happen? Because of the mass advertising and propaganda of the mental health establishment and the psychiatric drug cartel. Those are the two entities responsible for bringing ADHD to your front door, bringing it to your child. Everybody in America thinks they're an expert in ADHD diagnosis. And the crazy thing about it is most people, Ms. Blue, don't even know the criteria for the diagnosis. Crazy thing about it. People are quick to tell you your child has ADHD. My son has it, and I could tell your son has it because they behave the same way. You got kids talking about, I have ADHD. This is all due to the propaganda of the psychiatric drug cartel. This is their whole goal, to make people get comfortable with giving their children psychiatric medicine. I mean, let's look at the other side of it. You have heroin, you have crack, you have methamphetamines, you have speed, you have all these illegal drugs that children are taught to stay away from, and they should, that adults are taught to stay away from, and they should. But isn't it ironic that the same children who we tell to stay away from illegal drugs are at the same time being made comfortable with legal drugs that are just as dangerous. And now, Ms. Blue, they're even considering creating liquid forms of the drug Also putting it in candy form so children won't spit it out of their mouths, because a lot of children are rejecting it because of the side effects and headaches that it causes. So they're going to candify. They're going to make it look like candy. And so that way the children will be more willing to take the drug.
Wow. Wow. Yes, that's a major problem. It's a really, really major problem. Speak to from our responsibility, particularly when it comes from the African-American community, because here's one of the things that I see as well, too, is it becomes very difficult, and this is what a lot of parents have shared with me, to fight this of having your child diagnosed with ADHD. Let's talk about the diet that our children are being fed at home, where the responsibility is on us. How is that playing a role and helping sort of push this drug and push these diagnoses with ADHD?
Here's the thing that parents need to understand. The primary thing is this. Every child on psychiatric medication in America, blue, black, brown, green, or purple,
right,
is taking that medication because their parent went to a doctor complaining or reporting complaints from a teacher who alleges that something's wrong with their child. My point that I'm trying to make is that the trigger, the catalyst, the initiator of this psychiatric child abuse are our parents. If you don't go looking for the medicine, your child can't receive the prescription. Whenever a parent comes to me saying, my child is on medicine and I want them off, my child is on medicine, I don't like the side effects, my first question, Mrs. Blue, all the time, I've even had this down here in Texas, my very first question is, why did you put them on the drugs in the first place?
Right.
The school does not have the power to do it. Doctors don't go looking for parents. They don't. Psychiatrists don't go looking for parents. We take our children to them, and then after they give them a prescription or a misdiagnosis, we get upset about it. What do you think the purpose of asking you to get your son tested for ADHD in the first place was all about? Why did they want him tested for conduct disorder? Why did they want him tested for oppositional defiant disorder? The diagnosis is nothing more than a conduit, a green light for your child to receive the drug. If you do not believe in giving children narcotics to control their behavior, then you should never consent to a disruptive behavior disorder evaluation ever.
Right. Yes. Very powerful. Very true. And so many times it's about, do you feel, the parents not understanding their rights?
I think it's a combination of parents not understanding their rights and parents having too much trust in the school to over-medication system. See, we have a school-to-prison pipeline, but then we also have a school-to-the-psychiatrist pipeline. And I think that our parents have too much faith in the school system. They assume that teachers have the best interest at heart. Now, I want to be honest here. I do not believe that every single white teacher has it in for black children. I don't believe that. But working in schools, I do know that the great deal of teachers that I have encountered who were not of African descent do tend to have a negative bias towards black boys. And many of them intentionally fabricate stories about our young men in an attempt to make it look like they're worse than what they are, so their parents will hurry up and take them to the psychiatrist. Now, there's exceptions to every rule, but a black parent does not have the luxury of assuming that a white teacher has their child's best interest at heart, because many don't. I'm not going to say all, but I am going to say many. Most of them do not have the best interest of our children at heart. Working in schools, I have been privy to conversations that if you heard them, you would probably never let your child go to school again. I've heard teachers say, I don't think any of these children can learn. I've heard school psychologists say, I will never diagnose one of those children as gifted. I need our parents of color to understand that just because he or she is a teacher does not mean that they are without racial bias. The same racial attitudes that they had before they became a teacher, they continue to have after they become educators. Remember, many of the theories about African racial inferiority were propagated by America's top psychologists and top educators. These were not poor and uneducated white people who said black people were inferior. These people came from the cream of the crop, and many of them were academics and psychologists, and that remains the same case today. Remember William Bennett, former Secretary of Education for the United States Department of Education. Do you remember what he said a couple of years ago about violence? He said, if you want to eliminate violence, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, if you want to eliminate violence, then we should abort all unborn black babies. He said this out of his mouth a couple of years ago. This was the chief educator in America. In your lifetime, you heard America's top educator say that we should exterminate all unborn black children as a way of solving our crime problem. In your lifetime, you've heard of the Bell Curve book written by two Harvard-trained psychologists, one of America's best-selling books of all time. I want to say that again. One of America's best-selling books of all time, which means people were interested in reading about false theories of African inferiority. So my point is, historical racism is still contemporary racism. The school is not your friend. The school is an extension of the incarceration system, which means that the teachers are the new police officers.
Yes, yes. I know when you were on last time, Dr. Umar, you were speaking about sort of this movement, and I see that this has become the case in many of our schools around the country where they are now putting psychologists inside the school.
Yes, indeed. Well, school psychologists have always, since the early 1900s, and definitely since 1975 with the birth of special education, we've always had school psychologists assigned to the schools. Now, most people will not know the school psychologist at their child's school because the National Association of School Psychologists, and I am a nationally certified school psychologist, but I do not plan to renew my national cert. And the reason why I'm choosing not to renew my national cert is because I haven't seen the National Association of School Psychologists do anything significantly to try to curtail the war that is taking place against black boys, nor do I think that they will approve of much that I have to say in my book. So I find it somewhat contradictory for me being a member of a professional association that really doesn't stand for what I stand for or represent what I represent. So I am a nationally certified school psychologist, but when that membership expires in a couple of months, I do not plan to renew it for those reasons. But the National Association of School Psychologists recommends that there be one school psychologist for every 1,000 students. The American Psychological Association recommends that there be one school psychologist for every 2,000 students. So if you look at an average 300-student school or an average 500-student school, then that means that every school psychologist will be responsible for 2 to 3 schools. And that's basically how it operates. If you look at any school district, black, white, rich, poor, there's normally one school psychologist for every 3 schools. So you never meet the school psychologist unless your child is actually referred for special education. And according to the American Psychological Association, you only need one for every 2,000 students, which I think is a bit ridiculous. How can you have one person responsible for screening for learning problems or emotional issues for every 2,000 students? So because of these ratios, there's not enough of us to go around. And I do think school psychologists could be very beneficial to the educational process if we were used more as preventive professionals as opposed to interventive professionals. And what I mean by that is school psychologists were used to prevent special ed, to eliminate behavior problems, as opposed to sending kids down to the psychiatrist for medication, then that would increase our value for our children. But unfortunately, we're used exclusively to misdiagnose black boys and throw them in special education, not because anything's wrong with their ability to learn, but because the teacher doesn't want to be bothered with him.
So true. Wow. Lots of information. Every time you come on, it is always a good eye-opener to really kind of keep us balanced and really moving forward when it comes to just understanding this work and some things that we need to be working on. In light of what's been going on, particularly the situation that happened in Connecticut, also there is another situation, of course, in Japan. And these were all about school children. And really, a lot of the crimes that have been committed lately have been with a particular age group. I don't think maybe the nationality has been consistent. But if you can speak on some of these crimes that are being played out by some of these children that some would call some of these new drugs that we have, the ADHDs and all of these different diagnoses that's been going on.
Yes, indeed. I am going to be featured in an article on the Connecticut massacre that's going to be coming out in the Final Call this coming Tuesday and Wednesday, the official publication of the Nation of Islam. I was interviewed earlier today by Charlene Muhammad, who's one of the writers for the Final Call, and they tend to call on me quite regularly to get my opinion about things, and I respect them for doing that. Now, in my hand right now, Mrs. Blue, I'm holding a book called The Pill Book, which all of your listeners need to go and buy tomorrow, and you can often get it at the supermarket where I purchased mine at, in the aisle that sells the books in the magazines. You need a copy of The Pill Book, because The Pill Book will tell you the side effects for nearly every single drug that you ever ingest, whether it's for heart disease or cancer or diabetes, or if it's a psychiatric medication. Now, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to turn to the page that gives you the side effects for methylphenidate. And methylphenidate is actually the scientific name for Ritalin. And so what I want to do is turn to Ritalin on the page here. And Ritalin is page 742. I want to read you guys quickly the side effects for Ritalin, because when I tell parents how dangerous these drugs are, they look at me like I'm crazy, like I'm making it up. Despite my profession in education, they say it's no way that anybody would give a child a medication that causes those problems. So here we are, page 742, 15th edition of the Pill Book, published in 2012. So this is new, okay? Now, methylphenidate is the scientific name that is often of the drug that is often sold under the brand or commercial names of Ritalin, Concerta, and Metadate. So if your child takes Ritalin, Concerta, Metadate, or Focalin, those are the four most popular commercial names for the scientific drug methylphenidate, which is a central nervous system stimulant. Let me say that again. It is a central nervous system stimulant. In other words, Mrs. Blue, they're giving your child a drug to deal with hyperactive behavior, but the drug itself stimulates your child's nervous system. So if the child is already overstimulated, why are you giving them a chemical that's going to stimulate the nervous system? And the reason they do that is because when you overstimulate the nervous system, what happens is that it shuts down because it's being overactive. It's like your car. If your car has been overheating for a while, sooner or later it's just going to do what? Shut down because it can't take the pressure. And that's exactly what our boys' brains are doing. So what are the side effects of methylphenidate? It says, let me see here. Let me turn the next page. Here we go. Possible side effects of methylphenidate: nervousness, inability to sleep, rash, itching, fever, hallucinations, convulsions, symptoms resembling those of arthritis, appetite loss, nausea, dizziness, blurred vision, or other visual disturbances, abnormal heart rhythm, headache, obsessive compulsive disorder, drowsiness, changes in blood pressure or pulse, chest pain, which means what? It messes with your heart. Stomach pain. Here's another serious one. Psychotic reactions. That means schizophrenia. Your child can develop schizophrenia as a result of taking ADHD medicine. Also, changes in the blood components. Loss of scalp hair. Your child can go bald. Headache, stomach pain, weight loss, sleeping difficulties. Also, what else do we have here? Serious reactions can develop when taken with other drugs. Also, it may increase anti-convulsant blood levels. What else do we have here? Vomiting, agitation, uncontrolled twitching, convulsions followed by a coma. Did you hear that, Mrs. Blue?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Convulsions followed by a coma. Let me say that again. Your child can go into a coma taking psychiatric medicine. Euphoria, which means they can get high. Confusion, hallucinations, delirium, sweating, flushing, headache, fever, abnormal heart rate, high blood pressure, dryness of the mouth and of the nose. So I ask your listeners, Mrs. Blue, after hearing the list of side effects for Ritalin, Concerta, Focalin, and Metadate, who listening to this show would want to give that to their child so they can sit still long enough to be miseducated by an American public school system that only graduates one out of every four black boys in the first place?
Right, right. Wow. Yes. Wow. Well, lots of things to think about, lots of conversation that's going on here in the chat room as well, with a lot of people, because I hear it so much, and I know you even more than me, of so many of our young, particularly black boys, who are taking these medicines and have been taking them since they've been in third and fourth grade, you know, and some of them are in high school now, or some of them are in middle school. They're taking all of this medication, you know, and it's impacting them. It's impacting them. It's impacting our society. It's impacting everyone with this. What does a parent need to do if they feel there is a problem with their child? What is the alternative?
One thing that I talk about in my book is the pre-screening checklist that parents need to go through before they rush off and get a prescription, because drugs don't solve problems. They make them worse and create more. Let me say that again, parents. Drugs don't solve problems.
Right.
They make them worse and they create more. And you just heard a whole list of extra problems your child is going to have as a result of you giving them the medication. Now, what have I found in my work that tends to reflect a more acceptable explanation for hyperactivity and inattention? I have found boring teachers who lack enthusiasm and motivation for instruction. If a teacher is lazy and disinterested, so will his or her students be, Mrs. Blue. And why are we putting the children on medicine if we're not going to put their lazy and boring teacher on medicine. So that's one cause. Another cause, too many boys who are mentally gifted are being diagnosed with ADHD when they should simply be getting diagnosed with MG, mental giftedness. I have found that many of the black and brown boys who are taking stimulant medication do not have a problem, but instead they have superior intellectual ability that is not being appropriately programmed for in the classroom. And when a smart child is bored, they get distracted. When a smart child is bored, they get hyperactive. So instead of giving them the gifted support that they are required to receive by law, we're simply going to give them some drugs so they can be quiet. What else do I find? Ain't no daddy at home disorder, ADHD. Ain't no daddy at home disorder, ADHD. 75% of the black boys on stimulant medicine don't have fathers in their lives. Many of their fathers are incarcerated. So the ADHD for many boys is nothing more than a cry for the attention of their father or a biological, or a replacement. If they can't get the attention from the biological father, then we're going to have to find them an appropriate replacement. But we need to screen that mentor who's going to be in our son's life, because we have to make sure that he's not a pedophile. A pedophile. Very important. Now, another issue that I want to touch on that relates to this, and that is I need my mothers who are listening to this show to understand something real clear. If your son's father is incarcerated, he still has a right to be his father. Too many mothers, Mrs. Blue, nationally, black, white, rich, poor, are not taking their sons to visit their fathers in prison. Mothers believe, without proof, that taking their son to the jail to visit their father is going to increase the likelihood that he'll go to jail. They say that taking my son to a prison desensitizes him to prison life and makes it more acceptable. As someone who works in prisons, as someone who works with prisoners, as someone who works with the children of inmates, I can tell you that that is 100% false. Right now, I'm a part of a program in Pennsylvania where we take children to the prison to see their father. And why do we do that? We do it because we know that the child of an incarcerated parent is 7 to 9 times more likely to go to jail themselves. In other words, Ms. Blue, the solution to ADHD for a lot of black and brown boys is simply to take them to go see their father. It's that simple. And if the father is not in jail, allow your son to have a relationship with your father. That is the solution. Fathers in prison can still play a decisive role in the lives of their children. When a boy goes to see his father is in the best position to tell him, son, this ain't a place you want to be. Son, don't make the mistakes that I made. Son, I want you to do right. His father can help eliminate the risk of juvenile delinquency that he is now apt to undertake as a result of his father not being home with him. We have to understand that just because they're behind bars doesn't mean they have to be outside of the children's life. And a father in jail is still a father. And although he might have to communicate with his children through visitations, phone calls, and letters, that's still better than nothing. And I need your mothers to understand how important it is to get those children up to the prison and stop letting the fact that you're involved in a relationship with another man dictate whether or not your son or daughter can have a relationship with their father. Because what I'm finding, Mrs. Blue, what I'm finding working in the prison is the number one reason why the mothers are not taking the sons to see their father is because the new boyfriend don't want her to do it. How dare you put the ego of another man above that best interest of your child?
Yes, so true. So true. Yes. Dr. Umar Johnson, you guys, definitely bringing some things that we definitely need to know for our children. And so it is better for that child to have that connection with their father, to be able, especially our boys, to be able to understand regardless of what situation the father is in. Of course, we know there's going to be certain situations where it may not be best for the child to be able to connect with it. But like you said, too many excuses or too many reasons. So talk about it from the perspective of us sisters raising boys and where you see sort of the fall is there, other than the new boyfriend coming into play. What are some of the other things that you've seen in your practice and your work?
One of the most significant things that I've seen, and I do understand the pain and hurt of the mothers. I do. Ladies, I understand it. Some women have been physically abused by the fathers of their children.
Right.
Now, that trauma is serious.
Yes, it is.
But the problem is this. What he did to you was wrong, very wrong. But that does not mean that you can keep him from his children if he's not abusing them. And what I find, Mrs. Blue, some women, understandably, because domestic violence is a serious issue that too many black women are dealing with in silence because they can't turn to anyone because they don't know who they can trust. And when they go to the domestic abuse shelters that are run by white people, they get treated like they're animals. And so some women just choose to put up with the hell that they're catching until either he ends up hurting them for good and taking them out of here, or someone ends up coming to their rescue, which doesn't happen as much as we need it to. But I need the mothers to understand that if he ain't posing harm to them children, you still got to let them build a relationship with their father. And some women, because of the hurt that was caused them, simply choose to keep the man out of the lives of their children to punish the man, but you're punishing your child. Even if my father was abusive, I still have a right to know who he is. And I know that's hurtful for a lot of women. I know the pain, but they got to separate themselves from their children, Mrs. Blue. And a lot of our domestic issues, as it relates to mothers and fathers and children, revolve around the issue that a lot of women don't separate themselves from their child. They think the child is their property or an extension of them, and that they have a right to mess that kid's life up since they gave birth to that child. And in the African tradition, none of our children belong to us. In the African tradition, our children belong to the village. They simply come through us. You are nothing more than a vessel that brought forth the reincarnation of that ancestor. You do not have a right to mess up their life because of what you personally been through with their fathers.
Right. Here are some of the questions, and I'm just going to tell you that's coming in. Lots of discussion going on in chat here. And one sister said, come on, if the brother is violent and has been violent towards me, then how can I trust him to not be violent towards my child? And why?
Excellent. Excellent question. And I got an excellent answer. Just because a man abuses the woman doesn't mean he's going to abuse his child. Now, there's a lot of men who abuse everyone in the house, mother, son, and daughter. And then there's other men who abuse the mother and never lay hands on their children. Either way, it's not acceptable. But to the mothers who are concerned that the father might displace the anger for her or to the children, should simply arrange, Mrs. Blue, for supervised visitation.
Yeah.
Every county in America has a supervised visitation arrangement. That's when you take your children downtown to family court. In some places, it could be at the social services building. Other places, it can be at the church. Other places, it even has to be at the police station sometimes. But there are people who are there, including an on-call police officer who might even be actually present, depending on where you live, who supervises the visitation of that child with their father. They are not in the same room. Okay, they may be in another room, but they have visual access, or sometimes they might be in the same room, and they simply sit in the corner and read a paper as your child visits with his father for 2, 3, or 4 hours. So I can understand if she feels he might hurt the children. But the problem is that's not acceptable, Mrs. Blue, because she can go to a supervised visitation arrangement, and every county in America has that option for you.
So there's the answer. There's the answer. So let's talk about that, because here is sort of some of the things that I see as well, too. What about that brother that just doesn't want to do right and doesn't mean any good to anyone he comes in contact with?
Well, again, we want to start from the premise that it is best that the child always know their father and always have continuous contact unless he poses a risk to their physical, psychological, or sexual health. So unless there's verbal, sexual, or psychological abuse taking place against that child by their father, he has a right to see him, whether he's on drugs, whether he's homeless, whether he's a drug dealer, a deadbeat, whether you think he's the worst role model in the world. At the end of the day, and a lot of mothers don't like to hear this, it is still psychologically beneficial for that child to know their father. In fact, Mrs. Blue, I have seen situations, because I deal with all types of cases, I've seen situations where the child don't know the father at all. The father has been kept out the child's life because the mother deemed him to be a threat or unfit.
Right.
Then I've seen the other case where the child was in the father's life, but the father wasn't the type of father that he needed to be. Maybe he was a bit too harsh on the child. Maybe he was a little verbally abusive. Maybe he was a bit too quick to spank the child. And so the child may have developed some emotional side effects as a result of being exposed to a father who really didn't know how to be one. Guess what? Which one of them are going to have better life outcomes and psychological outcomes? The child who knew the father. In other words, the pain of not knowing your father has a worse effect on you over the long haul than knowing your father, but yet having a little bit of bumps and bruises along the way. I have seen it consistently, and even the research supports it as well, Ms. Blue. The research will tell you that a child who knows a father who may not have been a perfect father is still going to be better off than a child who doesn't know the father at all. We have to understand something. This is even greater than the psychological. We have to go to the spiritual plane.
Yeah.
We have to go to the spiritual plane. Every person on earth craves to know where they came from, Mrs. Blue. Everybody does. I get emails from men and women who are 40 and 50 years old still searching for their father that their mother never let them know about. And it's not always the women. It's mostly the women because women give birth. But it can be the men, too, because black men are the quickest growing men who actually are taking custody of their children. So you can have scarred black fathers who don't want the children to see the mother because of what she done. In fact, if any of your listeners have ever seen my Baby Mama Drama DVD, okay, you'll see that there's a case where there's a father whose daughters were dropped off to his house by the mother, and she never came back. She gave him the girls, and then she disappeared. She showed up like 10 years later, and now she wanted to be a part of her daughter's life. The father said that I told her no. You walked out, so stay out. And you know what I had to tell this brother? I had to tell him, you do not have a right to keep your daughters from developing a relationship with their mother. Yes, her walking out was wrong. Yes, she owes you an apology. Yes, she owes them an apology. Yes, she needs to make sure she's serious about being in their life before she comes back. But if that woman says that she's serious and she wants a relationship with her children and she recognizes what she did was wrong, you have to allow her that chance. It is not your decision. It is the decision of your children when they get old enough to make it as to whether or not they want to be involved in the life of their child. If you really love your daughters, you're going to let them meet their mother. So, Ms. Blue, at a basic level, the question becomes, whose interests are we serving? Whose interests are we serving? Because when I hear people say, when I hear custodial parents And I'm going to say custodial parent because it's not always the mother. Sometimes it could be the grandparent, Ms. Blue.
True.
It might be your mother who's raising your daughter who don't want you to see her anymore because you was on drugs for 10 years and she thinks you're going to expose her granddaughter to some unsafe environment. So it's not always just mother's hair. It could be the aunt. It could be the uncle who got custody of the son through Child Protective Services who don't want his brother to see his son for what he put him through years ago. And, again, my question is what? Whose interests are we serving? Are we serving your interests because you don't want to be bothered with that person? Because what they did to that child hurt you? Or are we serving the interests of the child in knowing that at the end of the day, they would be better off having known that parent than not to. Whose interests are we serving? And I'm going to ask people not to try to act like you're serving the best interests of your child when you know you're really only serving your own.
Right, right. It can be difficult, but yes,
you're
right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Ms. No, I just wanted to say, I know that I come off so staunch with these issues, but I have to. And the reason I have to, Mrs. Blue, is because parents, male and female, parents will try to look for an out from doing the right thing because they don't want to have to face their own pain or their own ego. So I have to go hard because we'll look for any little excuse as to why. You know, I see the same thing with psychiatric medicine. We'll look for any excuse as to why we should consider giving them the drug as opposed to accepting we're doing the wrong thing. Any little excuse as to why I shouldn't let my daughter see her mother because she walked out on her 8 years ago. That ain't my right. That baby got a God-given right to know her mother. And at 18 years old, if she decides she don't want to be bothered with her no more, I'm not going to force her. But as long as she is a child, it is my job to make the decisions in her life. And I know the best thing for any child is to know from whence they came.
It is. Yes. Yes. I definitely agree. Wow. Always bring the fire. Dr. Umar Johnson is here, you guys. You definitely want to go check out his website, www.drumarjohnson.com. You can purchase his book, his new project that he has out. Do that before January the 1st, and you will also get an accompanying DVD to go along with it as well. So lots of things, lots of services there. Any of you have any questions, we can do a Q&A in just a moment. We've covered so much information and still have so much to go. This, you know, when I start to look about this, and this is something that we talked about on the show Friday, it really comes down to relationships and how we relate to one another. I know that this is also a big part of your work, is really exploring this avenue of relationships. And so if we can just kind of touch on relationships for just a moment, I was really shocked, but maybe not shocked, at just this ownership that goes on in relationships and how even though we're in 2012, it seems like some of our models or our templates when it comes to relationships are based on, I don't know what they're based on, some 1960, 50 fantasy thing on television. How does that connect to us as African people when it comes to relating with each other?
Well, that's the main thing that we need to get right there. It is a relationship. It is not a ownership.
Yes.
Many of us have a concept in our minds about romantic relationships that says, I'm not relating to you, but I'm entering into a contract to purchase you. When we say my husband, and there's nothing wrong with saying my husband, but we say it as if we own him and everything he wants to do. Same thing with men, my wife. He is not your property. He is not your property. That is a living, breathing human being who has a right to not only do as they see fit, but they have a right to walk away from that situation if you ain't giving them what you need. So the first thing we got to do is recognize that we don't own anybody. That's
right.
The first thing we have to do. We have a very materialistic and Eurocentric approach to romantic relationships. Get rid of the concept of ownership, because people who own things tend not to treat them as well when they know they don't own it. See, Mrs. Blue, if you give me your car, once I own it, I can treat that car any kind of way I want because it's mine now. But if you make it clear to me that I'm just leasing you this car, I'm letting you borrow my car, you're simply going to use my car, then I'm going to clean it, I'm going to make sure the gas is in it, I'm going to get a regular oil change. And why? Because I know if I don't take care of your car, I will lose it because it is not mine. And we need to understand that in a relationship. You need to take care of that other person because it is not yours. It does not belong to you. They are simply relating to you. You guys have an arrangement and an agreement. And if you do not treat that person well, they're going to take their self out of your life because you do not own them. That's number one. Get rid of the concept of ownership because that is one of the biggest causes of why we mistreat each other. The second issue is that we need to have informed consent when we begin to date. What do I mean by informed consent? When you purchase a house, you get a walkthrough. You do what? Some research on the house. You want to see if there's any taxes owed, how much work has been done. If you're going to go get a used car, you're going to do your research on a used car. You come to the psychiatrist or psychologist. We're going to make you sign a paper that lets you know that although you're coming in for therapy, we might not be able to help you. And in fact, we can actually hurt you. We can harm you. Things can be made worse as a result of you coming to therapy. That's called informed consent, knowing what you're going to get.
Right.
Now, let me be very, very honest here, sarcastically honest. All of us are used merchandise.
Yes.
All of us are used merchandise. Now, when you go to a thrift store and you buy something used, you are purchasing it with the full understanding that it may not be in optimal condition. So when you date somebody, you need to recognize that you're dealing with used merchandise that may not be in optimal condition. Now, sometimes you can get a used television that works better than the HD TV that you just bought for $800.
Right.
But you know that as is means you do not get a return on your investments. So when you date somebody, Mrs. Blue, all the time you put in, all the sexing that you did, all the gifts that you bought, all the time you spent with his child, his children, you have to understand something, that you are dealing with used goods, which means there may be a defect in that man that you don't learn about until it's too late, which means none of us should be dating. None of us should be dating unless we are willing to accept the fact that we can and are likely to get hurt.
Wow. So true.
And that is a pill most people do not want to swallow, Mrs. Blue. And if you cannot swallow the informed consent pill that says that there may be something wrong with this person because they have had relationships before they met you, then you do not need to be dating at all.
That's it. That's it. Woo! The chat room is going crazy. Oh, wow. True, though. That is true. It's one of those things that is very difficult. And, you know, we did a show on that. We talk about relationship issues. I'll have to say in my working practice, that's what I get a lot of questions about, is in this relationship era. A lot of it comes with the ownership, and people want to own. A lot of times I hear sisters say that they don't allow their man to do this or that, and that just blew me away. That how could that be? How could you feel that you can control another person to that degree? And what do you think you're actually going to get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very twisted scenario there, but looking at the scenario for used goods and really understanding that there is so much that's hidden, and that really just comes with just understanding how multidimensional we are as people. So no one should be dating unless you can enter into that agreement. Do you think that there is some other things that may need to be explored as an option when it comes to dating?
Yes, indeed. One of the reasons why American relationships, black, white, rich, poor, do not work out well, because in America, half of all married people cheat, and half of all marriages will end in divorce.
Yeah.
And in the black community, most new marriages will end within 24 years. So a black marriage is likely to dissolve at the same rate that black businesses do. So one thing that I have uncovered in my work that feeds this hyper divorce rate that American culture has, black, white, rich, poor, is that the concept of capitalism and materialism has actually infiltrated our relationship lives. And what I mean by that is when you buy a car, you don't plan on keeping that car forever until you find a better car. When you buy a house, pocketbook, pair of shoes, television, you're not committed to it. You're only using it for the time being. And the minute a better cell phone comes out, you're getting rid of the one you got. Many of us did not have a problem with our iPhone 4s. But when the iPhone 5 came out, we bought it just because it was. We were told it was better than what we got. Problem with relationships, Mrs. Blue. Most of our relationship culture, black, white, rich, poor, is based on a philosophy of continuous upgrade. Continuous upgrade, whether we are married or not, whether we are engaged or not, whether we have a child or not, whether we are cohabitating or not. Our relationships are based on a philosophy of continuous upgrade. Let me give you an example of how this works. I just got married last week. I have a good wife. She's good to me. She cooks for me. She takes care of me, takes to my children. Perfect. But guess what? There's a new person on my job, and she has a bigger behind than my wife. She cooks a little bit better than my wife. Now, there's nothing wrong with my wife. Nothing.
Right.
But because materialism and capitalism has infected our relationship behavior, I'm now cheating on my wife because I feel that I have to continuously upgrade my woman like I continuously upgrade my automobile. Women do the same thing. They have a good man. Good man. Nothing's wrong with him. But because one came along who got things he ain't got, they do what? Start dealing with him. And he might end up wrecking the marriage. And then when she leaves her husband for him, she finds out later he wasn't half the man that her husband were. But you can't go back and get him now because it's too late. He's too hurt. And when a black man gets hurt, that's somebody who's been hurt. Because I'm going to be honest, men do not heal emotionally as quickly as women. We do not heal emotionally as quickly as women. When you hurt a man, you have hurt somebody. Women, you guys are spiritually stronger because you are a manifestation of the divine. So you're able to deal with the bumps and bruises of relationships a little bit better. A sister can get hurt, heal herself in a year, go into another relationship, and expose her heart to possible harm all over again. A black man can't do that. Once he was hurt, it might take him 10 years before he can get over that first hurt. And every woman he meets after that first hurt, he's likely to hurt her to get revenge on a woman who hurt him before. Continuous upgrade says that we're always looking to improve upon our relationship situation with another person. And because we approach our dating in such a materialistic way, it is difficult for people to trust their partners because they know that their partner thinks the same way that they do, basically saying what? If I see something better, I'm going to test drive it.
Right, right. Yeah. Ooh, so true. So much upgrading going on. One of the major problems that happens in relationships is that. Let's talk about it from the standpoint of just really when it comes to the conscious community and so many people. I know we've talked about this before, but it keeps coming up. So I want to talk about it again. And just this idea about polygamy.
Sure. Let me say this. There's millions of black men around the world who can be content with just one woman.
Right.
Who only needs one wife. In fact, a man who is truly committed to his family will be so bogged down by the responsibilities that he has that if he's truly committed, he may have no need for another wife.
Right.
In fact, most men, when we talk about polygamy, polygamy for a lot of men, especially married men, is only to the extent that they can spend quality time with another woman once in a while when they need a break from their wife. That's the extent of their polygamy. So when we say that men are polygamous by nature, we're not saying that he needs a second full-time wife. We're saying that during the course of his life, he is definitely going to spend time with another woman for whatever reason, during whatever season. Does it mean your man is always going to have something on the side? No, it does not. Does it mean that he is likely at some times to go outside the relationship? Yes, it does. Most men are polygamous, although most of us would not admit it. But the point that I want to make, Mrs. Blue, very clear, polygamy is not a matriarchal system. And I want my sisters to hear me because I love them all. Polygamy is a matriarchal system, not patriarchal. It is matriarchal. Women in traditional African cultures created polygamy to look out for other sisters' best interests. We have this belief that men created the system of polygamy to exploit women. If you do your research on indigenous African cultures, most of which were matriarchal, Mrs. Blue, most of them are matriarchal, which means that the women developed polygamy to look after their best interests. It was about sisterhood, not brotherhood. And that's why in most traditional African polygamous arrangements, the woman chooses her co-wife.
Right.
The man does not bring the co-wife to the first wife and say, this is your new co-wife. You need to deal with her. That is polygamy in Islam, Mrs. Blue, which is patriarchal. That is polygamy in Jewish, in Hebrew systems, or Moorish systems, which are patriarchal. So yes, in a patriarchal polygamous society, in patriarchal religions, the man dominates and does what he wants. But in an African polygamous arrangement, polygamy is a feminine system designed by women to benefit them. And that's why if we ever go to a polygamous system in the Western world, it will have to be the women to develop it and the women to maintain it. It is not for the men. It is for the sisters. And I need our women to understand that if you don't embrace polygamy in some way, shape, or form, you're going to continue to be exploited, because without an accountability system, men are free to sleep with as many women as they want, whenever they want, because too many black women are trying to act like it ain't going on. Everybody's saying my man ain't doing it. We are living a lie. And as a result of living a lie, black women are being used and abused.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. That's true. I often say most sisters are in a polygamous relationship and don't even know it. Don't know it. A lot of conversations going on in the chat room.
I know they love me on the chat room despite their comments. I love y'all anyway.
Lots of conversations, and some of the sisters are saying, well, what about us? We talk about polygamy, but what about polyandry? You know, what about that?
Let's look at it. Let's look at it. In her defense, in my sister's defense, there have been cultures that have practiced polyandry in history.
Yeah.
On the continent, there have been polyandrous systems. First of all, I want to be clear about something. We got to be clear on this. Polygamy is simply multiple marriage.
Right.
Polygyny, P-O-L-Y-G-Y-N-Y. Polygyny is a man with more than one wife, and polyandry is a woman with more than one husband.
Yes.
Although polyandry has historical roots in Africa, it has never been practiced as much, nowhere near as much, as polygyny. And why is that? Because polygamy itself is a wartime marriage system to ensure the continuity of the community. Let me say that again, because that's the one thing that we miss in this discussion. Polygamy is a wartime strategy that is adopted to ensure the continuity of the community. Why? Because men die in war.
Yeah.
Women can die in war. And so what states have done since the beginning of time is, if we're losing more women than men, we adopt polyandry to make sure we still have family systems. If we lose more men than we have women, we adopt polygyny to make sure that our families survive. So when we talk about polygamy, Mrs. Blue, this conversation would not be relevant if there were not a war on black men. So I need my sisters and brothers to put this in the context of a war on black men. Because there's some arguments that say more boys are born into the world than women. There's some statistics that say that there's not a shortage at birth. And guess what, Mrs. Blue? I don't argue that. It might be true. There may be an equality of male-female birth. There may be more men than women. But guess what? By the time we reach the age of maturity, black women in the Western world far outnumber black men, regardless of how it got there, which is normally due to the war on black men, homosexualization, incarceration, miseducation, psychiatric illness, homosexuality, all these reasons contribute to the reduction of black men. So whether it is God-imposed or not is irrelevant. The reality is, in the adult ages, black women significantly outnumber the black men. So the only reason why we're saying that women are going to have to consider going into polygamous arrangements is because there's not enough men to sustain you all, given the war on us. If that changed tomorrow, Mrs. Blue, there would be no need to talk of polygamy. And the other thing I want to point out is that polygamy does not have to be permanent, Mrs. Blue. Let me give you an example. Let's say we adopt polygamy as a marriage alternative from 2015 to 2035. So for 20 years, the black community in America is going to go to polygamy for 20 years. And then once we have adequate male childbirth, we have our own schools, our own economic system, we now have a system in place where we can fight against the war on black men. It's enough boys now. There's no need for multiple marriage anymore. So I want us to understand that this can take several pathways. It does not have to be a permanent reality. It could be a temporary reality until we get to where we need to be. Now, let me give you this. Polygamy has to be controlled by the elders and the women. Listen to me how this should operate, Mrs. Blue. I have one wife. Umar and Mrs. Blue are married, hypothetically. I say I want a second wife. I go to the elders of Texas who regulate Texas state polygamy for the African community. Me, Dr. Umar, I would like a second wife. They're going to ask me, can you afford her? And I'm going to give them a list of my assets. They might approve them. They're going to say, we have to interview your current wife to see if she approves of this and to see how you treated her. Because if you two ain't working, then how the hell are you going to bring a second?
Exactly.
Which is why I believe there needs to be a regulation, Mrs. Blue, where you cannot take a second wife until you have been successfully married to one for a minimum of 3 years. That's rule number one. You cannot take two women at once because we don't know if you can treat one well, so how are we going to give you two? So you have to first prove that you can take care of one. So let's say I check out on all areas. They say, okay, you can have a second wife. But guess what, Mrs. Blue?
they're going to tell me that they have four lists, an A list, a B list, a C list, and a D list. Now, if polygamy is supposed to benefit black women, that means all black women should have an opportunity to get married, whether they can have children, whether they are unattractive, whether they have a fatal disease, whether or not they have been to jail, whether or not, you know, they have five or six kids by five or six different men. If polygamy is a matriarchal system, then polygamy has to benefit the women. So Umar Johnson cannot marry the four most voluptuous women in Texas and call that polygamy, because that ain't benefiting the sisterhood, that's benefiting the brotherhood.
Exactly.
So the elders are going to tell me, Brother Umar, we consent to you having a second wife. Here is a profile of all the women who are looking for husbands, but you cannot look in Section A. I'm going to say, why can I not look in Section A? They're going to say, because you're married to Miss Blue. She's gorgeous. She's attractive. She don't have many children, so we consider her an A-list woman. She's educated. She's an A-list woman. You can only have one A-list woman, because polygamy is supposed to benefit all the women in Texas, so you're going to have to go to the B-list. Who is the B-list? These may be women who were previously married and it didn't work out. These may be women who have children by more than two men. These are women who are still desirable. They still got it going on. They still got a life, but they're just not as perfect as we might want them to be when we come to a situation. But because polygamy is for the women, I got to get one from the B-list. So let's say I marry her, and that works out for 3 years. I come back to the elders and say, I want a third wife. Well, guess what, Mrs. Blue? They're going to interview the both of y'all to see how y'all getting along. And if everything checks out, they're going to say, okay, Brother Umar, you can have a third wife, but now you got to go to the C-list.
Right.
And guess who's on the C-list? These are women who are not physically attractive. These are women who cannot bear children. These are women who may have dropped out of high school, been on welfare most of their life. These are women that most men would not look at. But because polygamy is about the community and not your ego, you got to get a third wife from that group. And then when I come back for a fourth wife, Mrs. Blue, guess what?
Mm.
I got to go to the D list. And guess who's on the D list?
Mm.
These are the women with psychological issues. They might be schizophrenic. They might suffer from major depression. They might be drug addicted. They might have come out of jail for killing a husband. These are women with serious emotional and adaptive problems. But guess what, Mrs. Blue? Since I'm a psychologist and since I want to be a polygamist so much, guess what? My fourth wife is going to come from the D-list. So let me ask you this question. If that was how polygamy should operate, and if that's how it operated in traditional Africa to make sure all the women had an equal chance of getting married, how many black men do you think want to be polygamous anymore?
Yeah, you're right. That would eliminate a whole lot of the confusion that is going on just with those who are pretending. You know, a lot of sisters are saying in the chat room, when is this system going to be in place?
You know what? Here's the thing. We got to understand that there's two dominant opinions on polygamy amongst black women.
Yes, it is.
And I want your audience to listen to me well. You got two groups. You have the A and B list women, and you have the C and D list women. Now, the A and B list women, okay, that's all the sisters with the education. They got businesses. They got jobs. They doing okay. They got their own house. They independent, they taking care of their business. It's understandable for them to say, Mrs. Blue, I don't want to share my man. That's understandable.
Yes.
Because guess what, Mrs. Blue? In the real world, who wants to share their spouse? Nobody. But remember, polygamy is not about what you want. Polygamy is about what's in the best interest of all women. And the contradiction that black women have to deal with, Mrs. Blue, is to keep talking about the sisterhood and how we all sisters and queens and goddesses and this and that. But the minute somebody says, you're going to have to hear your husband because it ain't enough to go around, all that sister shit go to the garbage. Forgive my French. Forgive my French, but I'm trying to be honest here. Now, the other group, Mrs. Blue, is the Now, the C and D list women, these are women who ain't got it like that. They ain't been to college. They
right.
had nothing but negative experience with brothers and really looking for a good man, but they ain't got much to bring to the table. They got four or five kids, four or five baby dads. They're not proud of the mistakes that they had in life, but guess what, Ms. Blue? They want a chance to get it right. And
right.
guess what them C and D list women are saying, Mrs. Blue? They're saying, I don't mind sharing all of the trouble I've had with men in monogamous relationships.
Mm-hmm.
If a brother could treat me right in a polygamous one, I will give it a shot.
Yes.
But they can't say it out loud, Mrs. Blue. And do you know why they can't say it out loud? Because the sisterhood will tear their ass apart for going against their platform. Let's be honest. There's a lot of black women who would not mind being married to a good brother who will commit to just two women, treat them equally, put them both in their own house, put them both in their own car, put them both in their own business. They will jump at it tomorrow, but the problem is what? The sisterhood will condemn them. They will say that you are weak. You are selling out the sisters. You are not a goddess. You are a this. You are a that. You are a black man's doormat. They will make those women feel so small. And the problem is, Ms. Blue, is that the sisterhood is so strong that most black women is afraid to go against it. So even if they want to test out polygamy, they won't do it for fear of being ostracized by other women, many of whom don't know what they're talking about and never been in a good relationship they damn self.
Right. That's right. That's true. That's so true. That is so true. You know, and I'm sitting here and I'm looking in the chat room. This is always a very, very heated discussion and always a necessary one. And I'm looking at some of the comments that are being made. Some of the sisters in the chat room are saying that really they want it to be the other way around. And so, you know, my question is, I guess, to really think about it, I guess if we fantasize about it, we're no different than you guys as the brothers. You know, hey, who wouldn't like to have a whole group of brothers around you?
But the problem is, Mrs. Blue, they're not taking it out of the personal. Here's the question for the polyandrous women.
Yes.
Here's the question for the polyandrous women. What benefit to the community is a black woman with three husbands when it ain't enough for all the sisters to have one? You know what that is, Mrs. Blue? That's selfishness. That's looking out for myself. You mean to tell me that there is a one black man to eight black woman ratio in America? In some cities, it's worse. In New York City, it's like 1 to 12. In Texas, it's high. So you mean to tell me that it ain't enough for each woman to have one and you're going to take three?
Right.
The question is, where is the benefit to the community? Polyandry and polygyny is not about selfish interest. It is about what is going to help the community. Now, if there is a benefit to black women having three husbands when there's not enough for black women to have one husband, I would like to hear it.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with that argument, but there's not a shortage of sisters. The war is against the men. So if they can explain how that helps this shortage, I would like to hear it.
Yes. Yes, I would too. I think definitely we need to get ready to go to the phone lines. I know you guys are just dying to ask questions. If you're on the phone lines, because I know they're full, but you can still try to call in. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. And press 1 once you get on the phone line if you have a question for Dr. Umar Johnson. And you know, take a look at that. You know, take a look at that. Of course, and you know, like you said, what would be the benefit of really having that when we know there's already a shortage of black men? You know, one sister wrote in the chat room, you know, I've been told that I'm an alpha female, so I guess that means I need more than one man. Well, I consider myself to have sort of those traits of a woman, I guess a strong woman, alpha female. But it's not about your personality or your traits. That's not what we're talking about here. But yes, great discussion going on in the chat room. Dr. Umar Johnson is here, you guys. If you have not got a chance to go over and look at his new project, his book, and all the other work, maybe there is some counseling you need or some services. Everything can be found on his website, www.drumarjohnson.com. You can go there. You'll be able to check it out. You'll be able to pre-order the book, get it before January the 1st, and receive a very, very special gift that you'll get along with the book as well. If you're interested in having Dr. Umar Johnson come to your city, town, country, or wherever in the world you may be, that information is there as well. I think it's a good time for us to go to the phone lines. What do you say?
Sure, no problem.
All right. Well, we're going to go to the phone lines here, having a very, very wonderful and powerful and needed discussion, as always, with Dr. Umar Johnson. We're going to go to the first caller calling in, it looks like, from area code 757. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello, my name is Dawn, and I am calling from Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay, greetings, Dawn.
Hi, Dr. Johnson. How are you?
Peace and love, good sister.
I was just wanting to talk about your proposal for the polygamy. I think I have another maybe possible solution that I think may be effective for the community, that is also another alternative that might work a little bit more with the social construct that we have right now, where, you know, everyone feels like they're supposed to be with one person. Maybe trying to help with arrangement of marriage, maybe doing arranged marriages like they do in the Indian communities, in the East Indian communities, where, you know, maybe from childhood or even as adults, you do an arrangement of marriage. And I would just like to know what your thoughts would be on that, and I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay. I agree with you. I do think that we have bought too much into this European free marriage concept, where you go out and find your own husband and your own wife with almost no experience in choosing them. I do think that our parents and our extended family network in the community needs to play a more central role in marriage, because marriage is a community institution. In America, it is an individual institution. The reason why divorce is so high is because you don't have to answer to nobody when you decide to walk away from your family. But in a marriage that is based in the community, before you can get divorced, you have to talk to your parents, his parents, and the community, which makes it a less of a entertaining option for you. So I do think we need to go back to an extended system that includes a marriage decision that is in partly approved of by our families on both sides, as well as the community. I think that is absolutely essential. I also think we need to go back to a dowry system. A dowry system. In most traditional societies, if you wanted to marry a woman, you had to give her family a gift, and they had to approve of your request for marriage over and above whether she wanted you or not. It was the approval of the family that was also needed. And that dowry could be a financial amount. The dowry could be a house. But giving a dowry as a gift to the family of the bride was a symbolic show to demonstrate that you were truly interested in having this woman. So I think we need to make it a little bit more tougher for men to marry women by putting the dowry system in place, so that way he thinks twice to make sure this is really what he wants to do before he crosses that line. And I think that the sister needs to be taken through a rigorous interview and rites of passage process by other married women and queen mothers to make sure she's marriage material. Because let's be honest, some men are not husband material, and a lot of sisters are not wifey material at all. So on both sides, we need checks and balances, but I totally agree with what you're requesting. I think we need to go back to a community-based form of marriage to to cut down on divorce?
And, you know, I think it's a great question, and I'm sitting here, you know, as the sister posed it, and I'm really kind of running it through my mind. And I'm thinking about our community here at large, just thinking about us as people and really the family structure, particularly when it comes to us as Africans, whether we are here in the West or anywhere else, and particularly those of us here in the West. I mean, there really isn't so much of a family community. I mean, I think it would take us a long time to get there. These are some of the same people making some of these decisions that you work so hard to really kind of help us to understand. Do you think it would be possible, or how long do you think it would be before we could even get family members to really balance this out? And let me tell you why I say this, because it was that same system that really suppressed women and really put them into almost the slavery type sexual marriages.
Right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Mrs. Blue, that you have to look at arranged marriages before colonialism and those after colonialism.
Right.
And the reason I say that is once the white man came into Africa,
mm-hmm.
after slavery ended, was really the rush. 1887 was the great conference they had to carve up Africa. Colonialism, African marriage after colonialism, was largely influenced by behaviors that the colonizer dictated must take place. So a lot of that anti-woman abuse of sewing up the vaginas and cutting off the clitorises, that was all European invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's still with a lot of African cultures to this day, we got to recognize that that's the post-traumatic colonial disorder that they're suffering from. You do not find any of that practice prior to the coming of the European. So when we look at an extended family system of approving marriage, we have to look at the examples that was laid before the white man got there, because the treatment of black women by black men in Africa, which isn't much better than our treatment of black women here, was largely adopted, just like for us, by
right.
the example laid down by their colonizer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point, good point. I just can think about some of the brothers and sisters in the community helping to arrange these marriages. You know, I know it would take work. I think it would be good. I think definitely, I think it's just my language. I know the accountability is not there. And like you said, it's not just one-sided. It's not just with the brothers, but it's also with the sisters. And even when we talk about, let's not even go to the point of marriage, just really having a commitment to something or someone. Even sometimes it's hard for parents nowadays to be committed to their children, to be committed to themselves, or to be even committed to, like you said, a relationship, because there's really no one there to hold you accountable. So, yes, I believe the community getting involved will definitely really help these things move into a better direction. So thank you for explaining that. We're going to go to the next caller. Calling in from area code, it looks like 860. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. Let's go back. 860, you're live in the remix.
My phone is muted. This is Eric.
Okay, greetings.
Call from Connecticut. I know you talked about the thing what happened like a couple of days ago, but I'm not going to get into that because we all know that that was set up. Omar, one question for you, brother. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, in regards to the feminine, in regards to relationship, and, you know, most women don't want to share with a man. I don't know if you've ever emphasized, say, the importance of what we call feminism, or what they call this feminism our sisters have taken up lately. In regards, you know, I mean, little things. I don't know if you could elaborate a little bit more on that in regards to relationship, the effects on our relationships more.
Sure, sure. Well, number one, we got to understand that black women have a right to a movement because historically they have been oppressed by the white men and black men. Even going back to slavery, if you look at the abolitionist movement, a lot of women were not allowed in it, or they had to fight their way into it, and there was a lot of anti-slavery societies for women because black men treated black women the same way white men treated white women because that was their teachers. And
right.
So I definitely think that black women have a right to come together and fight their issues, but they need to fight it under an umbrella of black womanism. Black womanism is not black feminism.
Exactly.
Black feminism is a movement that was borrowed from white women who were taking up issues that they had with white men. The problem is the white feminist movement sought to draft black women so they could use their numerical strength to help them get what they wanted from their own men. The white feminist movement did not then, nor does it now, give a damn about black women. White women are just as racist towards black women as white men are racist towards black men. The black woman does not have the white woman as an ally, and she needs to understand that. But unfortunately, many of our young sisters and older sisters who belong to this feminist movement are taking lessons, strategies, and historical advice from a white movement that has nothing to do with her true issues. In other words, the black woman, her enemy is white supremacy, not the black man.
Right.
But white feminism is teaching her that the black man is her enemy. How is the black man not her enemy? The white woman was controlled by the white man. The black man doesn't control the black woman. The white woman was not hiring his woman. The black man doesn't have any institutions to deny his woman entry into. The white man controls the economic system, the prison system, the employment system, the religious system. So when the white woman said, I want to be a preacher, the white man could say, you can't be no preacher because we don't allow that. The black man does not have the control over the black woman that the white man has over the white woman. Yes, it was necessary for the white man, the white woman, to fight the white man because he was able to control her access to opportunity and resources. The black man has never been in a position to control the black woman's access to opportunity and resources. The black woman thinks we are her enemy, failing to recognize that the predicament that we are in, that is leading us not to marry our women, leading us not to take the best care of them, leading us to be unemployed, over-incarcerated, not there for our children, those stumbling blocks are placed in the path of black men by white supremacy. So the black womanist movement's job is to recognize that white supremacy is our enemy and our husbands, because whoever opposes the black man automatically opposes the black woman. That's what you call black womanism. But that ain't what's popping up all over Facebook. What's popping up all over Facebook is black feminism, reactionary, white-based, woman's live movement being used to liberate black women through hatred, ostracism, condemnation, and character assassination of black men. Sisters, be a black womanist. Stay the hell away from black feminism.
That's right. That's right. It is sort of a trick because, like you said, that word has been thrown around, but when you study it and understand the origin of where it came from, that's not our plight. That's not our plight at all, you know. It really isn't our plight. And sometimes, you know, I think it's a misunderstanding on both parties. I think sometimes when brothers see sisters stand up for themselves, as a sister was saying in the chat room, we sort of get labeled as sort of being this feminist, you know. And then sometimes sisters, you know, really take that route based upon just their own understanding of what it is that they're trying to do. So I think it definitely is something that needs to be examined because that's not our struggle. That's not our fight. Yes. Beautiful. Beautiful. They are going crazy in the chat room. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 219. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Greetings. Who's on the line, please?
Greetings. Peace. This is Brother Philip calling from Gary, Indiana.
Okay.
My friend's Brother Umar.
Greetings, greetings.
Peace, Brother Phil. Peace and love. Good to hear you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know it, man. I just want to give big ups to you, man, and just say look forward to seeing you in January. I ain't going to want to hold the line. I know everybody's listening.
I appreciate that. Looking forward to that. Chicago, January 12th. Looking forward to coming back to Chicago. Coach of Connection, 71st and Stewart. Looking forward to it.
Yes, sir. Peace and love, brother. See you then.
Peace and love, Brother Phil. All right.
All right.
Also, Mrs. Blue, just to let your listeners know, I'll be in California this coming Thursday, the 20th until the 24th. I'll be speaking at the Blessed Love Community Center in Los Angeles in Bookstore, Blessed Love Community Center and Bookstore. Thursday night at 6 o'clock, I'll be at the AFIBA Center, AFIBA, AFIBA Center on Friday night. I will be at the Karast Unity Center Saturday evening. I'll be at the Karast Unity Center Sunday morning and back again at Blessed Love Community Center. If anyone needs information on where I'll be, exact addresses this weekend, in Los Angeles, California, you can text my phone or you can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, or send me an email. But I'm coming back to California this weekend.
All right. We are definitely live in the remix, you guys, with Dr. Umar Johnson. And I'm sure that many of the listeners will be coming out to see you and all the places that you are. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. Press 1 when you get on the phone line so that we know that you are there. You're not in the chat room, are you, Dr. Umar?
No, ma'am. But you can let me know all the wonderful things my beautiful sisters have to say about me.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they are definitely loving you. Just a lot of conversation. And you know, one of the things when we start to talk about women and we start to talk about, you know, our daughters and as sisters, and I just have to say this, we say we love our brothers. I definitely love our brothers. But then in the same breath, we turn around and say, we want to teach our daughters. They don't have to be our busted babies for our brothers. You know, that's like an oxymoron. You can't say you love something, but yet you're teaching your daughter to defend themselves against something you claim you love. You know, we are the mothers and fathers of everything. And so just like it's an important role that fathers need to play with their sons, it is a very important role that mothers need to begin to play with their sons, too.
They need to watch their example, Mrs. Blue. What I find from sisters who are afraid of their daughters meeting the wrong men is that they fail to recognize the power of the example that they are showing to our little princesses. In other words, the woman will say, well, you know, I don't want my daughter with no good man. But you're dealing with one.
Right.
I found that the same women and some of these feminists who talk about how bad black men are have dealt with some of the worst ones at the same time that they're so great and divine, but the men they're dealing with are not treating them the way they're supposed to be treating them. And they parade these men around their children. So all I'm asking for the women to do is just practice what you preach. If you want your daughter to find a good mate, then bring nothing around her except a good mate. The best way to prepare her is by your example. You cannot bring drug dealing, marijuana smoking, profanity using, okay, unemployed men around your daughter and then complain about how afraid you are that she's going to find the wrong thing. She's not going to find it. She's actually going to gravitate to it because that's all you've shown her in your relationships.
That's true. That's so true. That's so true. I mean, really, it's so true. I really don't even have anything else to say to that other than it is definitely true. I've never thought to have to say these kind of words to my daughter. You don't have to be some man's cum bucket or bust it, baby. Why would I need to say that to my daughter? Like, why would I need to teach her that? This is something that us sisters, we really have to know that our children learn from us. And they learn, like you said, from our example. They're going to look at their mother and they're going to see that example. It doesn't mean we don't make mistakes as parents and as children, but they're going to learn from us. And so that example, like you said, is so critical to what you teach, to what you show, and to what is there. Point blank.
Yes,
yes.
Indeed. And the
yes.
other thing too, Mrs. Blue, and I want to say this as well, and this is the healer in me, the therapist in me. I know why our sisters, many of them, understandably too, don't want to entertain a polygamy conversation. I understand why. Because if you've never been treated right by a man, why in the hell would you consent to him having two women when you've never been treated right by just one man?
That's
so
right.
So from an experience perspective, I totally understand why black women are not interested in the conversation.
Right.
This is why I always like to premise my discussions on polygamy with the fact that we have a lot of work to do before we can go into that system. And I want to make sure sisters hear me when I say that this is not something that we could start practicing on January the 1st of 2013
right.
and expect it to start working. I do not advocate that. This is going to take some years of preparation and some years of organization and some years of re-education and some years of re-acculturation. This ain't something you just rush into.
Right.
Black men have sexually objectified the black woman as a sex object.
Yes.
Slavery taught us that. So I understand when my sisters say, all he going to see is two vaginas. All he's going to see is four breasts instead of two. And you know what, sisters? For a lot of men, you're absolutely right, because the white man taught us to sexually objectify the black woman as nothing more than a reproductive and pleasure instrument. But guess what? You have also been taught to objectify us as nothing but useless eaters, deadbeats
right.
who are good for nothing but sex. So you have also objectified us. So we both have to be re-educated on how to love, respect, and uphold the opposite sex. We all need that, because that post-traumatic slavery disorder is also affecting our relationships. Who in the hell wants a polygamous situation where the monogamous situations ain't working? I definitely understand what our sisters are talking about. The reason I bring this argument up is not to piss them off, but I bring this argument up because I see the effects of an illegitimate polygamy system every time I walk into our schools and I see brothers and sisters in the same classroom who are not allowed to say that they are brothers and sisters because they have two different mothers who are at war with each other, even though they privately accepted the fact that that man was dealing with both of them. So I'm talking about the children and how polygamy hurts them. How about all the children I meet who can't even say who their real father is because he's a married man and he has intimidated the mother into teaching the daughter to never mention his name because he's a pastor or he holds a prominent position or he's this or he's that. And as a result of that, the child goes through their whole life hiding who they really are. And do you know what that does to a child? To, number one, not have a relationship with your father, but then on the same hand, you can't even say who he is? This is what I'm talking about with polygamy. Listen to me well, black women. A black man does not need polygamy. We can have sex with all the women we want, whenever we want, because there's enough of you around who ain't getting enough TLC by a black man. So if I just want to experience different cookies, I can experience all the cookies I want without no accountability. Polygamy is about black men who want to do it the right way. Polygamy is about black men who are not going to lie, look you in your face, and say, you're the only woman I'm ever going to be with, when I know damn sure I'm going to want another one too. Polygamy is about saying, I want to be responsible, accountable. I don't want to disrespect you. I don't want nobody coming back to my woman saying, Umar is dealing with her. Umar is dealing with her. I want to let you know up front, this is your co-wife, and I'm going to treat you both like divine goddesses. Polygamy is about men who's willing to take care of those women equally, who's willing to pay two mortgages, who's willing to pay two car notes. It ain't about some irresponsible black man who just wants to have sex, because guess what? We can do that anyway. That's what most of us are doing now.
That's right. That's true. That's true. So true. So, so true. So, so true. And again, lots of discussion going on here. You know, there is some sisters saying, you know, black women aren't limited to black men. That's true.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
First of all, Mrs. Blue, I laugh at that only because when I hear those comments, they're not based on reality.
No.
White men are not rushing out to marry black women.
Nope.
Chinese men are not rushing out to marry black women. East Indians, Asians, Arabs, they are not rushing out to marry black women. So guess what? Is she limited to us? No, she's not. But if black women are looking at white men as an alternative to solve this inequitable distribution situation, it ain't going to work, because most of them don't want y'all. I'm just being honest. White men generally want white women. Do some of them marry black? Yes, they do. And do you know why a lot of them marry black? They marry black so they can use your minority status to get started in business. And then after they use you as a woman and a black woman to get them certain contracts and grants that enable them to get their business started, they then divorce you and go get a white woman. I've seen it over and over again. So if you think that the white man is your answer to your marriage problem, you do not understand white supremacy. Now, I will say this. You do have an option, and that option is to get a husband from the continent. That's true, Mrs. Blue. There's not much of a shortage in Africa. If the black women in America can't find a husband here, they can go to Africa and get one. But there's two problems, two cultural issues.
Mm.
Number one, you're going to have a very hard time beating out black women in Africa. Why? Because slavery masculinized black women. Many of our sisters are biologically women and psychologically white men. So if you go to Africa looking for a husband who you think you're going to boss around, who you think you're going to talk to any kind of way you want, who you
right.
think you're going to raise your children how you feel, it's not going to happen. Because if you know anything about African culture, the men are real men, and they take a very serious hand in their woman's life. So if you don't like black men telling you what to do sometimes, you damn sure don't want no African husband. Because if you go to Nigeria and marry one of my Igbo brothers, they're going to be telling you certain things that they expect to be done. And you will cook and you will clean. Now, you will be treated like a goddess. Yes, you will. You will be in a house that you want to live in. Yes, you will. You will drive the car that you want to drive. Yes, you will. But you will also do some of the things that you ain't used to doing. So can you go to Africa? Yes, you can. But you would have to change the way you think, because you cannot go over there acting like a white man.
Talking
now,
about
the other thing, Mrs. Blue, the other thing is black women culturally are not as attracted to some of our brothers from the continent, not because of anything that the brothers are doing. I want to be clear. but because our women, especially young black women, have been raised in the hip-hop generation. And what I mean by that, they like a man with a certain kind of a swagger. They like him with a certain kind of an energy. And because of that, many black women aren't attracted to African brothers because African brothers are coming from traditional culture. And these women have been raised over here. So they tend to want a man, you know, who wears polo suits or who wears his Timberlands, who got his pants sagging a little bit, who got a nice little stroll to him, who know how to flirt and kick game with the women. They like that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Black men in Africa, they ain't into that. It's all about the culture for many of them. So that's another issue with our sisters. Many of them just ain't attracted to African men. They're used to this hip-hop man.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two cultural issues. But, yes, if a sister wants to go to Africa and get a man, that is an answer to her question. But I want her to have informed consent, sweetheart, that it is not going to be done your way.
Mm, that's beautiful. Yes. Yes, you guys, you heard it here first. Dr. Umar Johnson. We're going to go to the phone lines. Calling in, it looks like, from area code 501. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Peace, this is Afia from Arkansas.
Peace, Afia.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
Dr. Johnson. Oh, I got one for y'all. Well, Dr. Umar, you've done a great job of going over many of these topics around the question or comment, I guess, I'm going to pose. I'm a woman who looks into polygamy and has been studying polygamy, and I guess my root is that I've always felt a strong sense for sisterhood. Like I can, you know, I can be a sister with a sister, you know. So, but what I've been running into is men and women who the basis of their polygamy situation, one of the, I ain't going to say requisites, but a strong condition in their polygamy venture is for the women to be intimate physically with one another. Not just intimate as sisters, you know. I guess I feel like sisters can be intimate without all that and still have a deep bond. And I just threw that out there to see what take you may have on or what psychological analysis
okay.
might have in that situation.
Sure. First of all, polygamy, in an African perspective, has nothing to do with orgy. It has nothing to do with threesomes.
Thanks.
If a man is telling you, because you are in a plural marriage, that you have to have sex with him and his other wife at the same time, that is European sexual behavior. We do not participate in orgies as African people. There is no such thing as come and join us and we're going to have a threesome. That is disgusting. That is Greco-Roman behavior, and that ain't got nothing to do with polygamy. When you are with me, you are with me, and when she is with me, she is with me. And when we are together socially, we're a family, but when we are in the bedroom, we are not in there as a threesome having sex. That is disgusting, and that has nothing to do with the system of polygamy from an African frame of reference.
Thank you, sir.
There it is.
Beautiful. It comes up so much, I know that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Because a lot of black men have bought into European sexual deviancy. I've gotten the emails.
Yeah.
I've gotten them. I could do a whole book on my emails, which I'm thinking about doing. A whole
yeah.
book. Brothers who telling sisters that they want to see them have sex with other women. Brothers who telling sisters they want to see them have sex with other men while they watch. Who does that to a woman that they love? But men are doing this, and women are doing it because sisters are desperate. They don't want to be alone, and too many men are exploiting the sister's desire to have a mate, and so sisters are doing anything to keep the man. And then once he rejects them and the relationship ends, now they hate themselves. They develop a hatred for self because they took themselves somewhere where they did not want to go, but they did it because they thought they would be able to keep a man. Ladies, listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Never do anything sexual. sexually, that is not within your character. Don't do it. If a man wants to sodomize you, don't do it. A man wants you to participate in the threesome, to make a video, to kiss another woman, whatever the sick stuff is, do not do it, because you will regret it if that relationship ends. And even if that relationship don't end, you can still end up regretting it. Never let nobody debase you sexually. Too many black men are picking up European sexual deviant behaviors, and they're forcing it on our sisters, and I need our sisters to know that it's okay to say no. There's still a lot of black men out here who are old-fashioned and traditional and prefer the regular good old Adam and Eve sex as opposed to all this filth that's running around here now.
So true. So true. So true. Great question. Thank you so much for calling in. Great question.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Peace and love. And, you know, here's something, Dad. It's a lot of this discussion going on in the chat room. People are saying, who would do that? It must be somebody with low self-esteem. Or someone else says, everyone should know.
Here they go with that again. Sisters are good at judging other sisters.
Right.
Okay? You don't know what you would do presented with a certain situation with a certain man. If you had an opportunity to date an NFL superstar or an NBA superstar, and he led you to believe that he was seriously thinking about making you his wife, and he asked you to do some freaky deaky, and you got caught up in the materialism and the image of what life would be like if this man married you, and the next thing you know, you kissing on another woman. All I'm saying is, it's so easy to judge somebody when you ain't been in their shoes.
Right.
Sisters are so quick to label somebody with self-esteem. Is it their fault, though? Self-esteem comes out of childhood. Is it their fault? So you're going to beat her up for having low self-esteem? Yes, she has a responsibility to fix it, but she didn't cause that in her. That came from her parents, her upbringing. You don't get self-esteem at 18. You had that at 8.
That's right.
So y'all got to back off of each other and stop trying to play judge and jury. This is what I don't like. Brothers and sisters do this, especially in the conscious community. We think we got a right to judge everybody but ourselves.
That's right.
Judge yourself first. You ain't perfect. If we looked at your life, I'm sure you've done some things that you wasn't too happy of with men, but you want to judge somebody else. Cut that nonsense out. We have a very, very prejudiced way about dealing with one another that it is trifling. Now, me as a psychologist, obviously, I've been taught to have compassion for people, okay? You can't be a good psychologist without it. But forget the profession. As a man, I have learned that you really got to understand certain situations. I met a man the other day, Ms. Blue, married to a white woman. I do not condone marrying outside of your race. I've told the brother I do not support it, and there's no excuse he can give me that would make me accept it. But
right.
I understood why he did it. It
right.
did not make it right. It did not make me change my mind. But I understood why he did it. What happened was he was married to this woman. He loved her, bought her a house, treated her good, Miss Blue. She cheated on him with his friend, which obviously wasn't a real friend, but she cheated on him with his friend, fell in love with the friend, married his friend, and moved away, and still married to his friend right now. Happily married to his friend. It destroyed him. His kids are being raised by his ex-best friend. He was so traumatized by what this black woman did that he couldn't date another one because his previous girlfriend set him up to be robbed. So the one before that set him up. So people came into his house and robbed him blind, and he found out from some evidence that was left that it was actually his girlfriend who got him robbed. So the one girlfriend got him robbed, could have cost him his life. The wifey marries his boyfriend, marries his friend. And so he was so traumatized by that that he said, I couldn't do another black woman. I had to try something else. Do I understand it psychologically? Yes. Is it acceptable? No. What about the homosexual boys who I work with? They know I do not condone that behavior. But I treat them for their depression because if I don't, they're going to kill themselves. So no matter how much I hate their behavior, I don't want none of my brothers killing themselves despite that sick behavior that they got.
Right.
So when they tell me look, I'm gay because I was molested when I was little, and then I was molested again, then I was molested again. So even though I didn't like it, I just grew to accept it because it was forced on me. I understand it, but I don't accept it. And we got to understand that you can understand why somebody did what they did. That doesn't mean you have to condone it, but at least have a little bit of compassion for other black women. That's why black women are so damn depressed in America, because when they go to their girlfriends, all they do is judge them instead of helping them.
Right.
And the reason why polygamy is such a problem for a lot of black women, it ain't because the man is going to be sleeping with two women. Most of your boyfriends are sleeping with three or four women. So that ain't the issue. The issue with polygamy is you afraid that he might like her more than he like you. You think her sex might be better. You think her food might be better. You think she might dress better than you. You think your biological children might like the other wife better than you. So the reason why most of you don't like polygamy is because you can't stand black women. How the hell are you going to share a man when you're competing with the person you got to share him with? Can we be honest, please, ladies?
Yes. Yes, so true. So true. So true. Mm-hmm. So true. All right, you guys. Dr. Umar Johnson, we're live in the remix. We're going to keep going. We're going to go to the phone lines because we have more callers. Lots of discussion going on in the chat room. And press 1 if you're on the phone line and you have a question so that we can get to your question. It looks like calling in from area code 718. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 718.
What time is it?
Okay, I guess they didn't have a question. Call in, it looks like, from area code 919. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
This is Black Magic in the chat room. I'm all from Raleigh. And my question is about, well, for the polygamy thing, if you have multiple wives, how would the bed arrangement work? You know what I mean? Like, would you
how would the, I didn't hear that. How would the
sleeping arrangement, like when you go to bed, like you have multiple wives, like,
okay,
would they all sleep in the same bed? Like, how does that work?
I personally do not, I'm not interested in a polygamy where my wives live in the same house unless that's what they want to do. Now, again, we want to keep in mind, we're talking about polygamy in an African context, which is a matriarchal system. We're not talking about polygamy from an Islamic or Christian or Hebrew or Moorish concept where it is a patriarchal system. We're talking about the matriarchal. So when you speak of any aspect of the arrangement, the question would always be answered with whatever my wives decide is best for them. So they decide that you're going to be with me 1 week and her the next week, that's fine. If they decide you're going to do one day here and another day there, that's fine. Remember, the whole purpose of the arrangement is to benefit the community by benefiting the women and the children. So whatever the women decide is fine. If they want to live in the same house, that's fine, okay? But most women, and especially black women in America, they can't stand each other. So I don't see them living in the same house. They need their own home. Now, for me personally, this is me talking. I only want two wives, two. And I think it would be best for me that they be on two different continents because I spend a lot of time traveling the world. So there's no need for my wives to be in close proximity because I'm not local. I'm international. I spend as much time in Canada as I spend in New York, okay, as much time in Los Angeles as I spend in Texas, as much time in Africa as I spend in Atlanta. So for me, it would be better to space my wives out. Otherwise, it's no need for me to participate in it. So I would look for a wife in America and one in London, or maybe one in Africa and one in the Caribbean. But that's how it would be for me. But they would not be geographically close to each other. And whoever I marry, they would obviously have to accept my work schedule because I'm normally flying and speaking. That's what I do. 52 weekends in a year, I'm speaking 50 of them. And so they would have to deal with me being away from home. But that's even if I had one wife, she would have to deal with me being away from home. My purpose for having two wives is not because I want to make two women happy, which I do, but also because with the work that I'm going to be doing in the next couple of years, if I'm blessed enough to be around, it's going to require the assistance of more than one woman. They're not just going to be wives having babies. These are going to be wives who are going to be helping me as my assistants and executives get the work done for the people. So they're going to have to be very organized working women. This just won't be a childbirthing marriage. This is going to be an institution-building marriage. And that's why I personally will need two, because that's too much responsibility for one woman. And because I'm a pan-Africanist, it only makes sense that I have children by two different women on two different continents. Because if I don't make it, at least one of those women will make sure my children are raised the way that they're supposed to be.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much for clearing that up for me.
Thank you for calling in. All right, we're going to go to the next caller. Calling in from area code 415. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are. You're calling.
Malik. I'm calling from San Francisco, California.
All right, greetings.
How you doing, Ms. Blue? Dr. Umar Johnson, I got to give you props. I got a couple of months ago, I caught you on television out here. It was broadcasted from Alameda, Oakland. And I was like, wow, when I seen you on television, I'm like, you really doing your thing. You know what I'm saying? But what I wanted to put out there was, it's a female, a sister. She put a book out called How to Change Your Man. But the way she put it out there is how the female is to change her inner man. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, I'm a single father. I got custody of my daughter, but I was married for 9 years to a sister that kind of like dogged me out. And right now we living in the shelter. She kind of used me because I never been to jail or anything. And you know, but what I come to find out with trying to date women, sisters, because I can't, I'm like you, I can't date outside my race. I just can't do it. I love my mother too much. You know what I'm saying? But they can't, it seems like they can't stand to be around an educated brother, a brother that's sure of himself, you know what I'm saying? Because I believe they feel like it's being a coward or a punk if they have to, if they find a brother that's sturdy and don't really need too much of support, you know what I'm saying? Or a sister to actually have them to get up and go to work and stuff like that. If a man is assertive, it's like you find trouble with the sister, you know what I'm saying, bearing with a brother that don't need none of that. But, I just wanted to give you props and just say that and put that out there, you know what I'm saying?
Indeed. I appreciate that, my brother. Also, to let you know, because I know you might be a little ways away from L.A., but I'm going to be here this week, Thursday to Monday, the 20th to the 24th, but I'll also be making my first appearance ever in Oakland. February the 9th, I'll be finally coming to Oakland on February the 9th. I don't have all the details yet, but just stay in touch with me, and I'll make sure I get those to you when they come through.
Definitely. Hey, brother, I tell all my friends about you. It's only it's only two brothers on the conscious circuit that actually got at me on Facebook is you and Seti. You know what I'm saying? And I really appreciate that, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like I've seen the things that you've been through being in the conscious circuit to where it's like it's hard for a lot of brothers to appreciate what you do because a lot of brothers can't do it and it's a lot of jealousy in there. But I understand what's going on because I took that same route growing up and I get a lot of grief behind me actually stepping up and taking care of my daughter, and instead of getting a pat on my back, you know what I'm saying, I get a lot of grief, and you would be, you wouldn't believe that it'd be mostly by the sisters. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
That really be hating on me. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
So, you know, it's just, it's all about staying strong and doing what we do in order to make it right for the next generation. You dig?
That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, bro.
All right. Peace, brother.
Yeah, thanks. And Ms. Blue, let me really quickly speak to that. Earlier, I was talking about the Baby Mama Drama DVD, and I was talking about how when the brother, you know, the mother dropped the two kids off and left and came back, and I told him he had to let the mother be back in the children's life because they have a right to know from whence they came. Well, that same brother, just like the brother who just called the show, told the audience that the mother walked out on her daughters.
Right.
And guess what the audience did? They jumped all over him. Well, what did you do to make her leave? A mother just don't leave her kids. You must have. Ms. Blue, they destroyed him for stepping up in raising his two twin babies.
Right.
That is insane. When a woman does it, nobody says anything. When
right.
she says the father walked out, y'all don't say, well, how we know he walked out? How we know you didn't push him out? How we know you ain't keeping him from his kids because he don't want you? They don't do that. They assume that he did wrong. And the sad thing about it is even when the father's doing right, raising his kids, they still blame him for the mother not being there. Come on now, sisters. You got a man stepping up, taking care of his children. How the hell you going to blame him for the mother walking out?
That's right. And
you still there, Ms. Blue?
All right. Greetings, everyone. Can you guys hear me? It's Brother Umar. Oh, there he is. Okay, somehow I kind of got kicked off. I think some of you may have too, but we're back. Let's go ahead and bring on Dr. Umar. Are you still with me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I didn't know what happened. I thought they shut you down.
Well, I did kind of warp off to another place, but I am back. And so what were you saying?
I forgot.
Oh, that's okay. I know we were talking about the brothers and how sisters jumped all over him taking care of his own child. Yes.
It's important for black women not to assume that the brother is always wrong. It's one thing to assume he's wrong because he's not there, but then you also assume he's wrong because he is there. Sisters have to watch. Here's the thing, Mrs. Blue. I'm going to be flat out honest. And I'm speaking for a lot of black men.
Right.
The bottom line is, when you get finished dealing with racism all day and you come home, you do not want to deal with racism in your house.
That's true.
That's the bottom line. You want to come home to a woman who's going to receive you, cuddle you, talk to you, okay, feed you, whatever the situation is.
Right.
Home got to be peace. And the reason why a lot of black men are walking away from women is not because they want to walk away from their wife and children, but you can't take the constant psychological terrorism that comes from some of these sisters who cannot be pleased or can tell when a brother is doing his best.
Right.
It's got to be easy. And a lot of sisters are difficult to please, and that's why a lot of these married men are leaving their women. I know it because they email me. I talk to them. I do child counseling. So I talk, and five men are saying, look, doctor, I've been with this woman for 15 years. Do you really think I want to leave this? But I can't take it. She's emasculating me in front of my children. She's telling my son he ain't got to listen to me. She's talking about me to her mother and her girlfriend.
Right.
I'm hearing my business around town. And then when he walks out, she wants to play victim. Come on, black women. Y'all got to stop. The black man is catching too much hell out here in the world to come home and deal with you. See, here's the thing, Mrs. Blue. We deal with the white man outside the house. And then a lot of us have to deal with the white man in the house in the form of our woman. And we're not going to put up with it. We're not. They're starting
That's
to
right.
leave brothers. I know a man been married to his wife for 20 years. 20. Nice
right.
house. She ain't got
yeah.
to work. She got a nice car. She ain't even got to take care of the kids. And guess what? She's still miserable.
Right.
So
and
I'm
you know,
to have a meeting with them next week to see what's going on. You know, it's two sides to the story,
right.
and I still got to see what she has to say. But come on
right.
now. Come on. I mean,
mm-hmm.
at some point, see, here's the thing, Ms. Blue. Black women got to understand that the black man can't do for you what the white man does for his woman, because the white man benefits from white privilege, and we suffer from white racism. So you cannot
right.
expect Umar Johnson, a psychologist, to put you in Oprah Winfrey's house just because you know a white psychologist who's doing the same thing in Beverly Hills. I don't
right,
make
right.
what he makes, even if
That's
I'm
true.
A better psychologist. Put it in context. And I'm going to be honest
right.
with you. And again, I speak for a lot of black men, especially those of us in the conscious community. I am not interested in marrying a woman who's married to materialism. I am
yeah.
not interested in that. I will not have my children raised by a woman who worships things made by white people. I am not into
mm-hmm.
that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I often have to make clear, because when Sister C, you got a doctorate, they say, okay, well, he can get me this. I'm not doing that. I'm not moving into
right.
a white neighborhood. I'm not doing that. You're not driving
that's
no
right.
fancy car. We're not doing that. That's money
that's
that
right.
can be used for our children or for the community. A lot of us got to get our priorities in order. If you want
that's
a black
clear.
Man, you can have a black man. That is not a problem. But you got to make
right.
sure you're the woman that the black man needs. We're always talking about what we need. What we
right.
need. What we
right.
need. Are you what the hell I need? That's the question.
That's right. That's true. That's true. You know, and as a black woman, you know, I have to speak on this. You know, I have not found that to necessarily be the case in my work. Me as my sister and other sisters, too, they're really just looking for a brother. And I know a lot of sisters like myself is willing to accept the brother. It has nothing to do with his education status, has nothing to do with the job that he has. I mean, hell, there are sisters that are even reaching out trying to date brothers who are in prison, incarcerated, just to find a brother. So
we need to talk about that real quick, too, that incarceration
yes.
dating.
Yes.
Let me say this.
Yeah,
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Say that.
Well, let me let you finish.
No, I just kind of want to finish the thought. This is what I wanted to say, is that I guess here is sort of where I sort of kind of have the issue there. If I don't really see that in the sisters, here's what I feel, is that these brothers are wanting this superficial-looking woman, and they're looking for traditionally what sisters would have been looking for, meaning brothers are looking for a sister to take care of them. They're looking for sisters who are educated, been to college, and someone that can take care of them. That can.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
For that type of relationship. So I think it is a kind of a mixed board there. I think it's some good brothers
it
out
is.
There.
It
but
is.
I'll tell you what,
I
don't hear a lot. I don't hear sisters saying that they are afraid to get an educated man. Are you kidding me? No. I don't hear that. But I just wanted to kind of bring some balance to that. But I do want you to speak on the sisters dating or reaching out to these brothers who are incarcerated.
Okay. Couple things. Sisters do want an educated black man. But a lot of women want a man who is effeminate enough to accept their dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
When sisters
meet
a strong black man, not all, but a lot of women, who is not going to let her bully them, they can't take it. You got to remember, although a sister wants a man, Mrs. Blue, many of
mm-hmm.
them have a very low opinion of black men. And a lot of that has been conditioned into them by the society, other black women, and the women who raised them. So you can very well want a husband. You could very well want companionship.
Right.
but yet and still you want a companion who you can control. And the problem mm-hmm. is a black man, a real man, is not going to let a woman tell
no,
him what to do.
Not at
he
all.
He is not going
not
to
at
do
all.
It. And nor should he do
he
it.
Shouldn't.
Because
he shouldn't.
If I ever have a son, I'm going to let my son know, don't no woman boss you around. You will never
yeah.
let no woman boss you around. And you
right.
can teach your son the same thing. If she wants a wussy, she can go find a wussy, but it won't be
that's
in you.
Right.
Straight up, and you will not marry a woman who you got to fight to prove that you are a man.
That's
you
right.
ain't going to do that
right.
either. And some women, because of that masculinity, that she-male complex,
right,
have this thing about them where they got to fight for the power. They want to be the man and the woman at the same
in the
time,
relationship.
And that has to go by the wayside. But this is what a lot of brothers are doing, Mrs. Blue, and you're right in what you just said. And I don't agree with my brothers. I don't agree with my brothers. There's some of them who say, you know what? Since she want to be the man and the woman, since she want to call all the shots, to hell with it. I'm going to let her work, and I'm going to stay the hell.
Let her do it. I'm going to do it.
I'm
going to
let her do it. And a lot of men are doing that, Mrs. Blue.
Yes, they
but
are.
But I don't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do I
mm-hmm.
think it's right.
Right.
Now,
right.
on the topic of dating men in jail. Now, I work in prison, so I want to choose my words wisely. I'm not going to tell women not to do it. I'm just going to ask them to check the true psychological reasons why
that they're
doing
it. Yes.
The reason why a lot of women date men in prison is because they want to fall in love with the idea of being
yes.
happily married. And yes. what I need them to be aware of, Mrs. Blue, some men,
mm-hmm.
not all, because men behind prison are still men like the rest of us. I do not see them any differently. I work with them on a regular basis. So I am not one of those people who say because he got on an orange jumpsuit, he's significantly different from me. Because you never know what you're going to do if you put in a certain situation. So the thing
right.
is this. Some men will use that pen pal relationship to build
right.
a case for an early parole or probation. So women have to be careful that their emotions are not being played with by this man who's trying to get out of jail and use her address, use her reputation, use her connections, and then once he get out, acts like he wants her for a little while and then goes back to being what he was, or even if he don't go back to being what he was, leaves her for a woman who he really wanted because she was just a strategy for the moment. Sisters.
Kind of like.
Prison. Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I apologize, kind of like
no.
brothers are doing that are not in prison.
True, very true. But the difference is that the man is not in jail, you have an opportunity to investigate where he lives, what
that's
he
true.
Does for a living. You
that's
have more
right.
of a control over whether or not this is something you want to be involved in. But remember, Mrs. Blue, if he's behind jail, you don't know why he's in jail except the reason he tells you.
That's
you don't
right.
know his family. You don't know his criminal record. I mean, he's in jail for this, but what was he in jail for prior to? You see, and
mm-hmm.
so women, it could be a very dangerous situation.
Yes, it
if
can.
If he's in there for selling drugs and he got people on the outside who still want him dead and you dealing
that's
with
right.
him, you got to be careful. That's all I'm saying. Be careful.
Yes.
Because I've seen women get their hearts broken. And really what it is, Mrs. Blue, he's selling them a dream.
Yes.
That pen and paper is a very powerful weapon. When you're a lonely black woman and you can't find a good man and you got a man behind prison saying, I can't wait to see you. You're the sweetest voice I've ever heard. I've seen the
right.
picture you sent me, and my goodness, if you ain't somebody I would want to marry. Ms. Blue,
right.
think psychologically, when you hunger for love, when
right.
you hunger for love and somebody
yes.
feeds you an oasis in the desert that turns out to be a mirage.
Yes.
Imagine where that leaves you. But guess what? The opposite is true too, Mrs. Blue. I've seen that pen pal relationship with a lover behind bars get women through some tough times. I've
yes.
seen where that man actually boosted her with that pen and paper. If it wasn't for that pen and paper, she may have not made it. So although there's the negatives, I've had seen the positives. But as a rule of thumb, I don't like women who meet men in prison. If they went to jail and you knew them prior, I can accept that a little bit more. I don't like it. Not because the brothers are bad. I want to be clear, Mrs. Blue. It's only because you really don't have informed consent about what's going on.
That's true. So true. You sisters hear that, right? Y'all heard it from a brother. So when I'm telling you to be careful, y'all just kind of blow that off. But you heard Dr. Umar Johnson tell you that definitely you want to make sure that you're very careful in those situations and when that happened. We have about, it looks like about 8 minutes left to go in the form. We do have the after hours if you would like to continue. I know it's been a very long day for you. It's been a powerful share here.
If they're still there and they got questions, we can roll.
All right. You guys heard it. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. You need to get on the phone lines before the 8 minutes is up to hear the rest of the show. If you don't, then you know what to do. You must download. Press 1 if you get on the phone lines and you have a question for Dr. Umar Johnson. And also, don't forget to go pick up his latest book and also all the other very enlightening and educating things over at his website at www.drumarjohnson.com. And you can find out everything about Dr. Umar Johnson, where he's going to be next, what he has going on, all of the products and services that can definitely help you. It's been an amazing chair here this evening. Lots of discussions still going on, so we're going to keep going. But I want to give you an opportunity as we have this 7 minutes here just to kind of give some closing words to those who are listening as it relates to the time that we're in and sort of where we're moving. Yes.
Yes, indeed. Well, I would like to say this for everyone. As we close out on these final days of 2012, I think we need to begin to prepare ourselves spiritually for the new age that we're about to go into. Everyone has heard the talk about the Mayan calendar that's supposed to end on the day of the winter solstice, December the 21st.
Yes.
And that time period has been sensationalized by the media. The world is not coming to an end, but there is going to be a shift in spiritual energy on a universal level. And this 2012 shift is actually preparing us for the new African age to come in a couple of more decades. And so although the age is not here yet, December the 21st, 2012 begins the preparation for that age. And as a result of that, there will be some shifts made, although the full shifts will not have taken place until we get into the age of Aquarius. And according to our ancestors, in the age of Aquarius, justice is supposed to be returned to the earth. So no one should get scared about anything ending.
That's right.
We should get optimistic. We should become eminently optimistic as Africans about our potential for changing our global status in the years to come. What's going to happen after December the 21st is the universe, the solar system, the energies, the ancestors, the Orisha, the Netaru, the Abusum, is going to create a universal system that allows Africans to speed up our return to glory. That means it's time to pray more. It's time to fast more. It's time to meditate more. It's time to chant and offer mantra more. It's time to forgive more. It's time to heal relationships that's been broken for years. It's time to start anew. You've been in a terrible relationship with somebody you should never hooked up with. It's time to make a shift. If you've ever made a New Year's resolution, this is the year you must do it, because the universe is about to help African people go back to our rightful place. Give up the depression. Give up the cigarette.
Yeah.
Give up the alcoholism. Give up the shopping addiction, the food addiction, the sex addiction. Give up the anger, the disappointment, the low self-esteem. This is our time, African people. This is our time. But if we waste it, if we ignore it, if we overlook it, we will be giving up on a significant opportunity that the great divine energy has given us to change our conditions. Please be sure to support me. Go to my website tonight, purchase the book, Psychoacademic Holocaust, the Special Education and ADHD Wars Against Black Boys at drumarjohnson.com. That's drumarjohnson.com. Follow me on Twitter, drumarjohnson.com. Follow me on Facebook, Dr. Umar Ifatunde. That is I as in independence, F as in freedom, A as in Africa, T as in tall, U as in unity, N as in nationhood, D as in destiny, and E as in earth. Dr. Umar Ifatunde on Facebook, Dr. Umar Johnson on Twitter. It's been a good evening. I look to see you in Los Angeles or whenever I'll be coming to your city, and you can check that on my website. Peace and love to all.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Wow, we're going to keep going here, you guys. Dr. Umar Johnson, amazing chair. It's always an honor to have you here on the platform. And definitely all of your words and wisdom that and knowledge you shared with us here tonight, especially about this shift, because I've been doing a lot of talk about this, and it's amazing how when you are in sort of that place, you're able to see the correlation and the frequencies line themselves up. So it does my heart well to hear you sort of echo that message also. For the rest of you who will not be joining us as we get ready to go into the after hours, don't forget to download, download, download. And remember, if you like the show, I want you to like it. And if you love it, I want you to love it and leave a comment. Leave a comment here. Leave a comment on iTunes. Leave a comment over on the Remix Family Group and the Remix Radio Group. On Facebook, leave a comment there. And definitely you want to go check out Brother Umar Johnson and go to his website, drumarjohnson.com, and you can find out all things and everything that he has. We're going to continue a little bit of this discussion here. Press 1, you guys, if you're on the phone lines and you have a question. Other than that, we're going to get ready to close out. Everyone is just loving the share. We are going to go to the phone lines. And calling in, it looks like from area code 832, you're live in the Remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Greetings. Who's on the line, please?
Yes, this is Lance from Texas.
Okay, greetings to you, Lance from Texas. Do you have a question for Dr. Umar?
Well, actually, I've been listening, and I had a lot on my mind, but just off the top of my head, I was very interested in networking with Dr. Umar. I'm actually, I just completed my Master's of Education, and I'm currently in the educational field, and I'm was very frustrated working in the public school system for the exact same reasons that you discussed here tonight. And I actually want to open up my own charter school for the arts, and I need some guidance and direction. And Ms. Blue, I'm sure that you will be able to help me because we have a reading scheduled in January. But
okay.
I did want to, reach out to Dr. Johnson. What would be the best way to maybe consult with you on a more intimate level?
Sure. Shoot me an email. You can email me through the website or directly at drumarjohnson@yahoo.com. You know, so shoot me an email. Let me know what you're thinking. I'd definitely love to help you out. If you want to go charter, first thing you got to do is download your state's. You said you're in Texas, so you got to go to the Texas State Department of Education website, the state DOE, and you want to download the charter school application. Then you want to contact the local public school board in your city. So, for example, if you're in Dallas, Dallas Public Schools, contact the local school board and ask them if there is a separate charter school application for the city. In some states, you do the state application, and that's all there is to it. In other states, you have to do the state application and the local public school board application as well. And so we basically need to fill both of them out. Now, what you also want to start doing is creating a steering committee. It doesn't need to be large. no more than 5 people. You don't want a big one because you don't want to have to let people go once the school is open whose work you really didn't like and who really can't help you go any further. So keep it small. Let it be people who are hard workers or who have significant connections, resources that you will be able to use. Do not just put your friends on there. Put people who have a purpose, people who are going to work, and people who have connections, and also people you can trust who ain't going to take your charter school idea, split off from you, and open your own. So get a couple people you can start working with, get them applications, and we can do a couple of teleconferences to get things rolling. You know, so this ain't difficult at all, but it starts with the applications and it starts with a handful of people who will help you pull it all together.
Okay, I sure do appreciate that information. I had another concern. I definitely want to incorporate some conscious concepts in the curriculum, but I was wondering. I know that at some point you have a little bit more autonomy to do what you need to do in terms of who you hire and who you put into different places of administrative on the administrative level, and also what you want to implement as far as curriculum. But I was concerned about it being approved, or how would that work?
Well, what happens with the charter school application, they're going to want to see your curriculum when you send in the completed application. You know, honestly, some things you don't even need to put in there. You just need to do them, okay? Mm-hmm. But you do basically need to have most of it in there. It's okay to do the African-centered curriculum. That's not going to be an issue with the charter school. You want to do a Black history class, it's not going to be an issue with the charter school. You only want to leave out things that are controversial. You know,
right.
You know, hypothetically, of course, you wouldn't do this, neither would I, but let's say you had a course on the history of homosexuality. That could be controversial because they're going to want to see exactly what you're teaching about homosexuality. So something like that, you wouldn't necessarily put that in because that's going to make it difficult for you to get approved. You know, but basically the stuff that you're trying to do with the arts, Africanized curriculum, do some Black history stuff, all of that will go through with flying colors. Because basically with the charter school, you want to do whatever you want to do with that school as long as you don't break any state laws or regulations. And local school boards do have oversight. You know, so they're going to make sure that you're following special education and all that other kind of stuff. Because if you're charter, you're still a public school. You're just charter, which is alternative. So you still got to have special ed and all that kind of stuff. You know, you're going to have to hire a couple white people, obviously, so they don't start saying that, you know, you're practicing reverse discrimination and that other nonsense. You know what I mean? But I think it's a good idea. I think charter schools are a good short-term alternative. Ultimately, you're going to have to go independent, though, because after a while, you're going to get tired of having to do everything the state tells you to do, and you're going to get tired of the public school being a watchdog, and you're going to get tired of having to always, you know, placate white folks, not coming
right.
across too black, you know. And so, but it's still a good step. It's still a good step. So once you go private, you already have a reputation, and the parents would have liked their children going in so much, they'll be willing to pay for it, and you'll explain to them how the school is even going to get better now that we're private. There's things we couldn't do as a charter that we can do now. So, you know, I like the idea. Get started because it is a process. You know what I mean? I doubt if you'll be in a place to be able to operate it by September of this coming year, 2013, but I think you're in perfect timing for September of 2014.
Okay, okay. I just want to thank you, Dr. Johnson. I also want to thank Ms. Blue. I was definitely moving away from education because of all of the things that you guys touched on tonight. But I think it was a show or two ago, and Ms. Blue, you were saying now is the time to be about your shit, as you would have put it.
Yeah.
So I definitely took that to heed and to heart, and the spirit definitely worked and moved in mysterious ways. And Dr. Johnson, you confirm what my soul already kind of picked up on with Ms. Blue saying that. So I just want to thank both of you guys, and I look forward to our oracle session of Ms. Blue.
All right. Well, beautiful.
Not
thank you so much for calling in and sharing that as well.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say, you know, we don't ever want to move away from anything that involves our
no.
children. You know,
no.
you just want to move into a different avenue. For example, when I left the school district of Philadelphia 7-8 years ago when I resigned, people say, well, you're leaving our children. I said, no, I'm not. I'm leaving the school district, but I'm not leaving our children. You'll still be able to call on me to help you out. I'm still going to give you the consultation, and I'm still going to be in the district. I'm just going to be testing privately with the charter schools, and I'm still going to be working with the principals, and I'm still going to be – I'm not leaving you. I'm simply giving myself the freedom I need to be a more effective force. And I've been able to help parents a whole lot more being outside the district than being inside the district. But I never walked away from the children. So it's important that we never walk away. We might walk into a different way of helping them, but we never walk away from them. And I do appreciate that.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right. Peace and love. Peace and love. Yes, yes, yes. Wow, amazing share here tonight. Still have quite a few people who are still hanging out in the chat room, still chatting. A lot of people are going to the website. They are going to purchase the book tonight. I know I definitely will be getting my copies as well, too. What we're going to do is I want to go ahead. We're going to close out the evening. And always want to let you know you're always welcome back on. I know we said we'll be doing this from time to time, and I want us to continue to do it because you bring so much powerful information every time that you come. So I just want to say thank you to you for bringing this powerful message to us tonight, and definitely peace and love to you and all of your work.
I thank you so much, Ms. Blue. And to my sisters, you know, I just want to say that I know sometimes I can get on y'all nerves, but I know y'all love me because if y'all didn't, I wouldn't get so many speaking requests all around the world. And y'all always there to support me. And when they start messing with y'all kids, y'all always call me, and I always help you. So I know y'all love me.
Yes.
I just don't like some of the things that I say, but I got to say them because my job is to make sure we're considering the issues, which is not always popular. But you would rather have a brother who's going to bring you the truth as you need to think about it, as opposed to somebody who's going to adjust everything they say based on what you like. Because there are some psychologists out there like that, Mrs. Blue. I have some colleagues who their whole message is based on what they think sisters want to hear. They'll tell them a lie if they think it's going to make them popular. But that's not how I built up my reputation. I built up my reputation as
not
being
at all.
Honest. And I'm going to keep it. I'm not trying to win a popularity contest, but I do like the fact that as a result of me being honest, I have earned a lot of trust and respect from my women. So even when they beat me up in the chat room, I still know it's a lot of love because the next girl will call me and ask me about what they need to do to protect their boy. So it's all love. I love my sisters, and I ain't never going outside my race. I can promise y'all that.
Well, beautiful, because we love you too. We really do, and it's always, like I said, you bring fire, and you bring it to us just as we need to have it, so it is definitely the balance, and really, you keep us in that place of balance, and we love you for it. I definitely love you for it, and welcome you back to come back to the Remix anytime. Consider this your home, too, so it was amazing, always. Learning, very insightful. People are PMing me. I'm getting emails. I'm getting notes and messages on just how much they love the information and how helpful it was and needed at this particular time. So beautiful. We're going to get ready to close out, you guys. Don't forget, download. Don't forget to also go over so you can check out Dr. Umar Johnson so that you can find out what's going on. Also get your copy of his latest book as well at www.drumarjohnson.com. And so for the rest of you, download. See you next week in the Remix. You know how we do. See you guys back then. If you like it. If you love it over on Facebook. Leave a comment. Love to hear your thoughts about the show as well as on iTunes also. And peace and love and much love, warm spirit, and much love to all of you out there as we get ready to close out this very powerful year and just begin to enter into a more exciting and powerful time. It's a time to stay balanced and a time to stay empowered. So peace and love, everybody.
Peace and love.
Amen.